room and taller than most, addressed a group of novices in front of one of the unlit fireplaces, briskly sending them off one by one on errands. Nisao and Dagdara were yellow Aja too. It was said that Dagdara, her graying hair marking considerable age on an Aes Sedai, knew more of healing than any two others. It was not as if Nynaeve would be able to do anything useful if she did go to Rand. Just watch him go mad. If she could progress with healing, maybe she could find a way to hold that madness off. There was too much that Aes Sedai were willing to call hopeless and let go at that to suit her. All of that flashed through her head in the time it took to look at Elaine and turn back to the men. We will be staying here. Uno, if you and the others want to go to Rand, you are free to, as far as I'm concerned. I fear I no longer have money to help you. The gold the Aes Sedai had taken was needed, just as they said, but she could not help wincing at the few silvers left in her purse. These men had followed her, and Elaine, of course, for all the wrong reasons, but that did not lessen her responsibility for them. Their loyalties were to Rand. They had no reason to enter a struggle for the White Tower. With a glance at the gilded coffer, she added reluctantly, "But I do have some things you can sell along the way." "You must go too, Tom," Elaine said. "And you, Julin. There's no point in remaining. We have no need of you now, but Rand will." She tried to press her casket of jewels into Tom's hands, but he refused to take it. The three men exchanged looks in that irritating way they had, Uno going so far as to roll his eye. Nynaeve thought she heard Julin mutter something under his breath about having said they would be stubborn. "Perhaps in a few days," Tom said. "A few days," Julin agreed. Uno nodded. "I could do with a little rest if I'm going to be running from warders halfway to Kyrian." Nynaeve gave them her flattest stare and deliberately tugged her braid. Elaine had her chin as high as it had ever been, her blue eyes haughty enough to chip ice. Tom and the others surely knew the signs by now. Their nonsense was not going to be allowed. "If you think you are still following Randall Thor's orders to look after us," Elaine began in frosty tones, at the same time that Nynaeve said heatedly, "You promised to do as you were told, and I mean to see..." "Nothing like that," Tom broke in, brushing back a strand of Elaine's hair with a gnarled finger. "Nothing at all like. Can't an old man with a limp want a little rest?" "To tell the truth," Julin said, "I am just staying because Tom owes me money. Dice." "Do you expect us to steal 20 horses from warders like falling out of bed?" Uno growled. He seemed to have forgotten just offering to do exactly that. Elaine stared, at a loss for words, and Nynaeve was having difficulty finding them herself. How far they had fallen! Not so much as a shifted foot in the three of them. The trouble was that she was torn. She had determined to send them away. She had, and not because she didn't want them around, watching her curtsy and scrape right and left. Not at all. Yet with almost nothing in Salidar as she had expected, she had to admit, however reluctantly, that it would be comforting to know she and Elaine had more than Birgitta to depend on. Not that she would take up the offer of escape, of course, if that was what it should be called. Not under any circumstances. Their presence would just be comforting. Certainly not that she would let them know that. She would not have to, since they were going, whatever they thought. Rand could find use for them, very probably, and they would only get in the way here. Except... The unpainted door opened, and Swan stalked out, followed by Lyanna. They stared at each other coldly before Lyanna sniffed and glided away, startlingly sinuous as she vanished around Croy and Eivor into the corridor that led to the kitchens. Nynaeve frowned slightly. In the midst of all that iciness, there had been one instant, a brief flicker she almost missed, with it right in front of her. Swan swung toward her, then abruptly stopped short, her face going blank. Someone else had joined the small gathering. Gareth Bryn, dented breastplate buckled over his plain buff-colored coat and steel-backed gauntlets tucked behind his sword belt, radiated command. Mostly gray hair and a bluff face gave him the appearance of a man who had seen everything, endured everything, a man who could endure anything. Elaine smiled, nodding graciously. A far cry from her astonished stares, coming into Salidar, when she had first recognized him the length of the street. "I will not say it is entirely good to see you, Lord Gareth. I have heard of some difficulty between Mother and you, but I am sure it can be mended. You know Mother is hasty sometimes. She will come round and ask you back to your proper place in Camelin. You may be certain of it."
"Done is done, Elaine."
Ignoring her astonishment, Nynaeve doubted anyone who knew Elaine's rank had ever been so curt to her. He turned to Uno.
"Have you thought on what I said? Shinarans are the finest heavy cavalry in the world, and I have lads who are just right for proper training."
Uno frowned, his one eye sliding to Elaine and Nynaeve. Slowly he nodded.
"I've nothing better to do. I'll ask the others."
Bryn clapped him on the shoulder.
"Well enough. And you, Tom Merrillan?"
Tom had half turned away at the other man's approach, knuckling his mustaches and staring at the floor as if to obscure his face. Now he met Bryn's level stare with one of his own.
"I once knew a fellow with a name much like yours," Bryn said. "A skilled player of a certain game." "I once knew a fellow who looked much like you," Tom replied. "He tried hard to put me in chains. I think he'd have cut my head off if he ever laid hands on me." "A long time ago, that would be. Men do strange things for women sometimes."
Bryn glanced at Swan and shook his head.
"Will you join me for a game of stones, Master Merrillan? I sometimes find myself wishing for a man who knows the game well, the way it's played in lofty circles."
Tom's bushy white eyebrows drew down almost as far as Uno's had, but he never took his eyes from Bryn.
"I might play a game or two," he said finally, "once I know the stakes. As long as you understand I don't intend to spend the rest of my life playing stones with you. I don't like staying too long in one place anymore. My feet itch sometimes."
"So long as they don't itch in the middle of a crucial game," Bryn told him dryly. "The two of you come with me, and don't expect much sleep. Around here everything needs doing yesterday except what should have been done last week." Pausing, he looked at Swan again.
"My shirts came back only half clean today."
With that, he was leading Tom and Uno off. Swan glared at his back, then shifted her frown to Min, and Min grimaced and darted off the way Lyanna had gone. Nynaeve did not understand that last exchange at all, and the nerve of those men, thinking they could talk over her head, or under her nose, or whatever, without her understanding every word. Enough of them, anyway.
"A good thing he has no need for a thief-catcher," Julin said, eyeing Swan sideways and plainly uncomfortable.
He had not gotten over the shock of learning her name. Nynaeve was not sure he had taken in about her being stilled and no longer the Ammerlin seat. He certainly shifted his feet for her.
"This way I can sit and talk. I've seen a lot of fellows who look like they might unwind over a mug of ale."
"He practically ignored me," Elaine said incredulously. "I don't care what the trouble is between him and Mother. He has no right—" "Well, I will tend to Lord Gareth Bryn later. I have to talk to Min, Nynaeve." Nynaeve started to follow as Elaine hurried toward that hall to the kitchens. Min would give straight answers. But Swan caught her arm in an iron grip. The Swan Sanche, who had meekly ducked her head before those eyes Sedai, was gone. No one here wore the shawl. Her voice never rose. It did not need to. She fixed Jewel in with a stare that had him almost jumping out of his skin.
You watch what questions you ask, thief catcher, or you'll gut yourself for market.
Those cold blue eyes shifted to Birgitta and Marigan. Marigan's mouth twisted as if she tasted something bad, and even Birgitta blinked.
You two, find an accepted named Theodrin and ask her about somewhere to sleep tonight. Those children look as if they should be in bed already. Well, move your feet.
Before they had stirred a step, and Birgitta was moving as quickly as Marigan, maybe quicker, she rounded on Nynaeve.
You, I have questions for. You were told to cooperate, and I suggest you do if you know what's good for you.
It was like being caught in a high wind. Before Nynaeve knew it, Swan was hurrying her up rickety steps with a railing cobbled together from unpainted wood, hustling her down a rough-floored corridor to a tiny room with two cramped beds built into the wall, one above the other. Swan took the only stool, motioning her to sit on the lower bed. Nynaeve chose to stand, if only to show she was not going to be pushed. There was not much else in the room. A washstand with a brick propping up one leg held a chipped pitcher and basin. A few dresses hung from pegs, and what appeared to be a pallet lay rolled up in one corner. Nynaeve had fallen far in the space of a day, but Swan had fallen farther than she could imagine. She did not think she would have too much trouble with the woman, even if Swan did still have the same eyes. Swan sniffed.
Suit yourself, then, girl. The ring. It doesn't require channeling?
No. You heard me tell Shiriam anyone can use it. A woman who can't channel? A man? Possibly a man. Turangrial that did not need the power usually worked for men or women. For any woman, yes.
Then you are going to teach me to use it.
Nynaeve raised one eyebrow. This might be a lever to get what she wanted. If not, she had another. Maybe.
Do they know about this? All the talk was of showing them how it works. You were never mentioned.
They don't know. Swan did not appear shaken at all. She even smiled, and not pleasantly.
And they won't. Else they'll learn you and Elaine have been posing as full sisters since you left Tar Valon. Moiraine might be letting Egwene get away with it. If she hasn't tried it too, I don't know a bar knot from a running hitch. But Shiriam? Carlinia? They'll have you squealing like a spawning grunter before they're done. Long before.
That's ridiculous. Nynaeve realized she was sitting on the edge of the bed. She did not remember sitting down. Tom and Jewelin would hold their tongues. No one else knew. She had to talk to Elaine.
We haven't pretended anything of the sort.
Don't lie to me, girl. If I needed confirmation, your eyes gave it. Your stomach is turning somersaults, isn't it?
It most certainly was.
Of course not. If I teach you anything, it's because I want to. She was not going to let this woman bully her. The last vestige of pity winked out. If I do, I want something in return. To study you and Lyanna. I want to know if Stilling can be healed.
It can't, Swan said flatly.
Now, anything short of death should be.
Should be isn't is, girl. Lyanna and I were promised we would be left alone. Speak to Faelaine or Emara if you want to know what happens to anyone who molests us. They weren't the first or the worst, but they cried the longest.
Her other lever, near panic, had driven it right out of her head, if it existed. One glance.
What would Shiriam say if she knew you and Lyanna weren't ready to tear out each other's hair at all?
Swan just looked at her.
They think you're tamed, don't they? The more you snap at anybody who can't snap back, the more they take it for proof when you leap to obey every time an Aes Sedai coughs. Was a little cringing all it took to make them forget the two of you had worked hand in hand for years? Or did you convince them Stilling had changed everything about you, not just your face? When they find out you've been scheming behind their backs, manipulating them, you'll howl louder than any grunter. Whatever that is.
Not so much as a blink. Swan was not going to lose her temper and let any admissions slip out. Yet there had been something in that brief look. Nynaeve was sure of it. "I want to study you and Lyanna whenever I want. And Loghain." Perhaps she could learn something there as well. Men were different. It would be like looking at the problem from another angle. Not that she would heal him, even if she discovered how. Rand's channeling was necessary. She was not about to loose another man on the world who could wield the power. "If not, then you can forget about the ring and tell Irunriod." What was Swan after there? Probably just to revisit something that at least seemed like being Aes Sedai. Nynaeve stamped firmly on momentarily rekindled pity. "And if you make any claims about us pretending to be Aes Sedai, then I'll have no choice but to tell about you and Lyanna. Elaine and I might be uncomfortable until the truth comes out, but it will, and the truth will make you weep as long as Faelaine and Imara together." Silence stretched. How did the other woman manage to look so cool? Nynaeve had always thought it had to do with being Aes Sedai. Her lips felt dry, the only part of her that did. If she was wrong, if Swan was willing to put it to the test, she knew who would be weeping. Finally, Swan muttered, "I hope Moiraine has managed to keep Egwene's backbone more supple than this." Nynaeve did not understand, but she hardly had time to consider it. The next instant, the other woman was leaning forward, hand outstretched. "You keep my secrets, and I will keep yours. Teach me the ring, and you can study stilling and gentling to your heart's content." Nynaeve barely managed to hold in a relieved sigh as she clasped the offered hand. She had done it. For the first time in what seemed forever, someone had tried to bully her and failed. She almost felt ready to face Mogadine. Almost. Elaine caught up with Min just outside the back door of the inn and fell in beside her. Min had what looked like two or three white shirts wadded under one arm. The sun sat on the treetops, and in the fading light the stable yard had the soft look of dirt not long turned, with a huge stump that might have belonged to an oak right in the middle. The thatch-roofed stone stable had no doors, allowing a good look at men moving among filled stalls. Surprisingly, Lyanna was talking to a large man on the edge of the stable's shadow. Roughly dressed, he looked a blacksmith, or a brawler. What was surprising was how close Lyanna stood, head tilted as she stared up at him. And then she actually patted his cheek before turning away and hurrying back to the inn. The big man stared after her a moment, then melted into the shadows. "Don't ask me what she's up to," Min said. "Strange people come to see Swan or her, and some of the men she... well, you saw." Elaine did not really care what Lyanna did, but now that she had Min alone, she did not know how to bring up what she wanted. "What are you doing?" "Laundry," Min muttered, shifting the shirts irritably. "I can't tell you how good it is to see Swan the mouse for once. She doesn't know whether the eagle is going to eat her or make her a pet, but she has the same choice she gives everybody else. None." Elaine quickened her pace to keep up as they crossed the stable yard. Whatever that was about, it gave no opening. "Did you know what Tom was going to suggest? We are staying." "I told them you would. Not a viewing." Min's step slowed again as they started between the stable and a crumbling stone wall, down a dim alley of brush stubble and trampled weeds. "I just didn't think you would give up the chance to study again. You were always eager. Nynaeve, too, even if she won't admit it. I wish I'd been wrong. I'd go with you. At least I..." She muttered something furious-sounding under her breath. "Those three you brought with you are trouble, and that is a viewing." There it was, the crack she needed. But instead of asking what she had intended, she said, "You mean Marigan and Nicola and Arena? How can they be trouble?" Only a fool passed over what Min saw. "I don't know exactly. I only caught glimpses of Aura, and just out of the corner of my eye. Never when I was looking right at them, where I might have made something out. There aren't many who have Auras all the time, you know. Trouble. Maybe they'll carry tales. Were you up to anything you wouldn't want the Aes Sedai to know about? Certainly not, Elaine said briskly. Min looked at her sideways and she added, Well, nothing we didn't have to do. They can't possibly know about it anyway. This was not taking her where she wanted to go. Drawing a deep breath, she leaped off the cliff. Min, you had a viewing about Rand and me, didn't you? She went two steps before she realized the other woman had stopped. Yes. It was a wary word. You saw that we were going to fall in love. Not exactly. I saw you'd fall in love with him. I don't know what he feels for you, only that he's tied to you some way. Elaine's mouth tightened. That was about what she had expected, but not what she wanted to hear. Wish and want trip the feet, but is makes the path smoother. That was what Leany said. You had to deal with what was, not what you wished was. And you saw there would be someone else. Someone I'd have to share him with. Two, Min said hoarsely. Two others. And I'm one. Mouth already open for the next question, for a moment Elaine could only stare. You, she got out at last. Min bristled. Yes, me. Do you think I can't fall in love? I didn't want to, but I did, and that's that. She stalked past Elaine down the alleyway, and this time Elaine was slower to catch up. It certainly explained a few things. How nervously Min had always sidestepped talking about it. The embroidery on her lapels. And unless she was imagining it, Min was wearing rouge, too. How do I feel about it? She wondered. She could not sort it out. Who is the third? She asked quietly. I don't know, Min mumbled. Only that she has a temper. Not Nynaeve, thank the light. She gave a weak laugh. I don't think I could have survived that. Once more she gave Elaine a cautious sidelong look. What does this mean between you and me? I like you. I never had a sister, but sometimes I feel like you. I want to be your friend, Elaine, and I won't stop liking you, whatever happens, but I can't stop loving him. I don't very much like the idea of having to share a man, Elaine said stiffly. That was certainly an understatement. Me neither. Only, Elaine, it shames me to admit it, but I will take him any way I can get him. Not that either of us has much choice. Light, he scrambled my whole life. Just thinking about him scrambles my brains. Min sounded as if she did not know whether to laugh or cry. Elaine exhaled slowly. Not Min's fault. Was it better that it was Min rather than, say, Berylaine or somebody else she could not abide? Tavirin, she said. He bends the world around him. We are chips caught in a whirlpool. But I seem to recall you and me and Digwayne saying we'd never let a man come between us being friends. We will work it out somehow, Min. And when we find out who the third is, well, we'll work that out as well, somehow. A third? Could she be Berylaine? Oh, blood and ashes. Somehow, Min said bleakly. Meanwhile, you and I are caught here in a leg trap. I know there's another. I know I can't do anything about it, but I had enough trouble reconciling myself to you. And Cairhien and women aren't all like Moiraine. I saw a Cairhien and noblewoman in Baerlon once. On the surface, she made Moiraine look like Lyanna, but sometimes she said things. Hinting. And her auras. I don't think a man in the whole town was safe alone with her. Not unless he was ugly, lame, and better yet, dead. Elaine sniffed, but she managed to make her voice light. Never you mind about that. We have another sister, you and I. One you've never met. Avienda is keeping a close eye on Rand, and he doesn't go 10 steps without a guard of Aiel maidens of the spear. A Cairhienan woman? At least she had met Berylaine, knew something of her. No, she was not going to fret over it like some brainless girl. A grown woman dealt with the world as it was and made the best of it. Who could it be? They had come out into an open yard dotted with cold ashes. Huge kettles, most pitted where rust had been scrubbed away, stood against the encircling stone wall, which had been toppled in several places by trees growing up in it. Despite the shadows crossing the yard, two steaming kettles still sat on flames, and three novices, hair sweat-soaked and white skirts tied up, were hard at work on scrub boards stuck into broad washpots full of soapy water. With a glance at the shirts under Min's arm, Elaine embraced Sayadar. "Let me help you with those." Channeling to do assigned chores was forbidden. Physical labor built character, so they said. But this could not be counted the same. If she swirled the shirts around in the water violently enough, there should be no reason to get their hands wet. "Tell me everything. Are Swan and Liana as changed as they seem? How did you get here? Is Loghain really here? And why are you laundering some man's shirts? Everything." Min laughed, plainly pleased to change the subject. "Everything will take a week, but I'll try. First I helped Swan and Liana get out of the dungeon Elida had stuck them in, and then..." Making appropriate sounds of amazement, Elaine channeled air to lift one of the boiling kettles clear of its flames. She hardly noticed the novice's incredulous stares. She was used to her own strength now, and it rarely occurred to her that she did things without thinking, that some full-eyed Sedai could not do at all. Who was the third woman? Avienda had better be keeping a close eye on him.
Chapter 51. News comes to Kyrian. A thin thread of blue smoke rising from the plain, short-stemmed pipe clenched in his teeth, Rand rested one hand on the balcony's stone railing and looked into the garden below. Sharp shadows were lengthening. The sun was a red ball falling through a cloudless sky. 10 days in Kyrian, and this seemed the first moment he had stood still when he was not asleep. Solanda stood close by his side, pale face tilted up to watch him, not the garden. Her hair was not so elaborately done as that of a woman of higher rank, but it still added half a foot to her height. He tried to ignore her, but it was difficult to ignore a woman who insisted on pressing her firm bosom against your arm. The meeting had gone on long enough for him to want a moment's break. He had known it for a mistake as soon as Solanda followed him out.
"I know a secluded pool," she said softly, "where this heat might be escaped. A sheltered pool where nothing would disturb us."
The music of Osmodian's harp drifted through the square arches behind them. Something light, cool-sounding. Rand puffed a little more vigorously. The heat. Nothing compared to the waste, but... Autumn should be coming on, yet the afternoon felt like the depths of summer. A rainless summer. Shirt-sleeved men in the garden were spreading water from buckets, doing it late to avoid evaporation. But too much was brown or dying. The weather could not be natural. The burning sun mocked him. Moraine agreed, and Osmodian, but neither knew what to do or how, any more than he did. Samael. Samael he could do something about.
"Cool water," Solanda murmured, "and you and I alone."
She snuggled closer, though he did not see how it was possible. He wondered when the next taunt would come. No dashing off in a temper, whatever Samael did. Once his methodical build-up in Tyr was done, then he would loose the lightning. One crushing stroke to put an end to Samael, and add Ilion to his bag at the same time. With Ilion, Tyr, and Kyrian, plus an army of Aiel big enough to overwhelm any nation in weeks, he...
"Would you not like to swim? I do not swim well myself, but surely you will teach me."
Rand sighed. For a moment he wished Avienda was there. No. The last thing he wanted was a bruised Solanda running screaming with her clothes half torn off. Putting his eyes, he looked down at her and spoke quietly around his pipe. "I can channel." She blinked, drawing back without moving a muscle. They never understood why he would bring that up. For them it was something to be glossed over, ignored if possible. "They say I'll go mad, but I'm not mad yet. Not yet." He chuckled from deep in his chest, then cut it off abruptly, made his face blank. "Teach you to swim. I'll hold you up in the water with the power. Sidene is tainted, you know, the Dark One's touch. You won't feel it, though. All around you, but you'll not feel a thing." Another chuckle, with a hint of a wheeze. Her dark eyes were as wide and round as they would go, her smile a sickly rictus. "Later, then. I want to be alone. To think about..." He bent as if to kiss her, and with a squeak she dropped a curtsy so sudden that at first he thought her legs had collapsed. Backing away, curtsying hurriedly at every other step, she babbled about the honor of serving him, her deepest wish to serve him, all in a voice on the brink of hysteria, until she bumped into one of the square arches. A final half-bend of her knees, and she darted inside. With a grimace, he turned back to the railing. Frightening women. She would have made excuses had he asked her to leave, would have taken a command as only a temporary setback, unless it was to stay out of his sight. And even then, maybe word would spread this time. He had to keep a short rein on his temper. It ran away too easily of late. It was the drought he could do nothing about, the problems that sprang up like weeds wherever he looked. A few moments more alone with his pipe. Who would rule a nation when he could have easier work, such as carrying water uphill in a sieve? Across the garden, between two of the royal palace's stepped towers, he had a view of Kyrian, harshly lit and shadowed, mastering the hills more than flowing over them. His crimson flag, with the ancient Aes Sedai symbol, hung limply above one of those two towers, a long copy of the dragon banner over the other. That one flew a dozen places in the city, including the tallest of the great unfinished towers, right in front of him. Shouting had done as little as orders there. Neither Tyrans nor Kyrianin could believe he really meant that he only wanted one, and Aiel did not care about banners one way or another. Even now, deep inside the palace, he could hear the murmur of a city jammed to bursting. Refugees from every corner of the land, more afraid to return to their homes than they were to have the dragon reborn in their midst. Merchants seeping in, selling whatever people could afford to buy, and buying whatever people could not afford to keep. Lords and armed men rallying to his banner, or to someone's. Hunters for the horn thinking it must be found near him. A dozen forgaters, or 100, were ready to sell it to any of them. Ogier stonemasons down from Stedding Tsofu to see if there was work for their fabled skills. Adventurers, some of whom might have been bandits a week ago, come to see what they could pick up. There had even been 100 or so white cloaks, though they had galloped out as soon as it was clear the siege had been lifted. Did Pedro Niles' ingathering of the white cloaks concern him? Egwene gave him hints of things, but she saw matters from the White Tower, wherever she stood. The Aes Sedai point of view was not his. At least the wagon trains full of grain were beginning to arrive from Tyr with some regularity. Hungry people could riot. He wished he could have simply left it at being glad they were not so hungry anymore. But there it was. The bandits were fewer, and the civil war had not resumed. Yet. More good news. He had to make certain it stayed that way before he could leave. 100 things to take care of before he could go after Samael. Only Ruark and Bale remained of the chiefs he really trusted, those who had marched from Roedion with him. But if the 4 clans who had joined him late could not be trusted on the march to Tyr, could he trust them loose in Kyrian? Indirian and the others had acknowledged him as Karakarn, but they knew him as little as he knew them. The message that morning might be a problem. Berelain, first of Mayenne, was only a few hundred miles south of the city, on her way to join him with a small army. He had no idea how she had let it across Tyr. Oddly, her letter had asked if Perrin was with him. No doubt she feared Rand might forget her small country if she did not remind him. It might almost be a pleasure to watch her spar with the Cariennan, the latest in a long line of firsts who had managed to keep Tyr from swallowing their country by playing the game of houses. Perhaps if he put her in charge here, he would be taking Mylan and the other Tyrans with him when the time came. If it ever came. This was no better than what was waiting inside. Tapping the dottle from his pipe, he ground out the tabak's last sparks under his boot. No need to risk fire to the garden. It would go up like a torch. The drought. The unnatural weather. He realized he was snarling silently. First work on what he knew he could do something about. It took an effort to smooth his face before he went in. Asmodian, as well-dressed as any lord, with falls of lace at his neck, plucked a soothing melody from his harp in one corner, leaning against the dark, severe paneling, as if lounging at his leisure. The others who were sitting bobbed out of their chairs at Rand's appearance, and backed down at his sharp gesture. Mylan, Torian, and Aracombe occupied carved and gilded chairs on one side of the deep red and gold carpet, each with a young Tyran lord at his back, mirroring the Cariennan on the other side. Dobrain and Marengil had a young lord apiece behind them, too, each with the front of his head shaved and powdered like Dobrain's. A white-faced Salanda stood at Kolaver's shoulder and trembled when Rand looked at her. Schooling his face, he strode down the carpet to his own chair. That chair alone was reason to control his features. It was a new gift from Kolaver and the other two, in what they imagined was the Tyran style. He must like Tyran gaudiness. He ruled Tyr, had sent them here. Carved dragons held it up, all sparkling red and gold with enamel and gilt, and great sunstones for their golden eyes. Two more made the arms, and others climbed the tall back. Countless craftsmen must have gone without sleep since his arrival to make the thing. He felt like a fool sitting on it. Asmodian's music had changed. It had a grand sound now, a triumphal march. And yet, there was an added wariness in those dark Cyrenian eyes watching him, a wariness reflected in the Tyrans. It had been there before he went outside, too. Perhaps in attempting to curry favor, they had made a mistake that was only now dawning on them. They had all tried to ignore who he was, pretend he was simply some young lord who had conquered them, who could be dealt with and manipulated. That chair, that throne, held up in front of them who and what he really was. "Are the soldiers moving on schedule, Lord Dobrain?" The harp faded away as soon as he opened his mouth, Asmodian apparently absorbed in preening it. The leathery man smiled grimly. "They are, my lord dragon." No more than that. Rand had no illusions that Dobrain liked him more than any of the others did, or that he would not try to gain advantage where he could. But Dobrain actually seemed ready to hold to the oath he had sworn. The colorful slashes down the chest of his coat were worn from a breastplate, being buckled over them. Marengil shifted forward on his chair, whip slender and tall for a Cariennan, white hair almost touching his shoulders. His forehead was not shaved, and his coat, stripes nearly to his knees, bore no visible wear.
"We need those men here, my lord dragon."
Hawk's eyes blinked at the gilded throne, focused on Rand again.
"There are many bandits at large in the land yet."
He shifted again, so he did not have to look at the Tyrans. Mylan and the other two were smiling faintly. "I have set Aiel to hunting bandits," Rand said. They did have orders to sweep up any brigands in their path, and to not go out of their way to find them. Even Aiel could not do that and move quickly. I'm told that 3 days ago stone dogs killed nearly 200 near Morel. That was near the southernmost line claimed by Kyrian in recent years, halfway to the river Irelel. No need to let this lot know that those Aiel might be as far as the river by now. They could cover long distances faster than horses. Maringill persisted, frowning uneasily.
There is another reason. Half of our land, west of the Alguenia, is in the hands of Andor.
He hesitated. They all knew Rand had grown up in Andor. A dozen rumors made him a son of one Andorran house or another, even a son of Morghaes herself, either cast off because he could channel, or fled before he could be gentled. The slender man went on, as if tiptoeing barefoot and blindfolded among daggers.
Morghaes does not seem to be reaching for more as yet, but what she has already must be taken back. Her heralds have even proclaimed her right to the—
He stopped abruptly. None of them knew who Rand meant the Sun Throne for. Maybe it was for Morghaes. Colivert's dark gaze had Rand on balance scales again. She had said little today. She would not, until she learned why Solanda's face was so white. Suddenly Rand was tired of nobles balking, of all the maneuvering in Deus de Mar. Andorran claims to Kyrian will be taken care of when I am ready. Those soldiers will go to Tyr. You will follow the High Lord Mylan's good example of obedience, and I'll hear no more on it. He swung toward the Tyrans. Your example is a good one, Mylan, isn't it? And yours, Aracom? If I ride out tomorrow, I won't find 1,000 defenders of the stone camped 10 miles south who were supposed to be on their way back to Tyr 2 days ago, will I? Or 2,000 armsmen from Tyran houses? Those faint smiles faded with each word. Mylan became very still, dark eyes glittering, and Aracom's narrow face went pale, whether from anger or fear it was hard to say. Torian dabbed at his lumpy face with a silk handkerchief pulled from his sleeve. Rand ruled in Tyr and meant to rule. Kalendor, driven into the heart of the stone, proved that. That was why they had not protested against his sending Kyrian and soldiers to Tyr. They thought to carve new estates, perhaps kingdoms here, far from where he ruled.
"You will not, my lord dragon," Mylan said finally. "Tomorrow I will ride with you, so you may see for yourself."
Rand did not doubt it. A rider would be dispatched south as soon as the man could arrange it, and by tomorrow those soldiers would be far on toward Tyr. It would do, for now. "I am done, then. You may leave me." A few starts of surprise, masked so quickly they might have been imagined, and they were rising, bowing, and curtsying, Solanda and the young lords backing away. They had expected more. An audience with the dragon reborn was always long and tortuous, as they saw it, with him firmly bending them the way he meant them to go, whether it was declaring that no Tyran could claim lands in Kyrian without marrying into a Kyrianan house, or refusing to allow the expulsion of four gators, or making laws apply to nobles that had never applied to any but commoners before. His eyes followed Solanda for a moment. She was not the first in the last 10 days, nor the 10th, or even the 20th. He had been tempted, at least at first. When he rejected Slender, Plump promptly replaced her. As tall or dark, for Kyrianan anyway, replaced short or fair. A constant search for the woman who would please him. The maidens turned back those who tried to sneak into his quarters at night, firmly, but more gently than Avienda had handled the one she caught. Avienda apparently took Elaine's ownership of him with little short of deadly seriousness. Yet her Aiel sense of humor seemed to find tormenting him very satisfying. He had seen the satisfaction on her face when he groaned and hid his face as she started undressing for the night. Thus, he could have resented her deadly seriousness if he had not quickly understood what was behind that string of pretty young women. "My Lady Colivert." She stopped as soon as he spoke her name, cool-eyed and calm beneath her ornate tower of dark curls. Salanda had no choice but to remain with her, though she was plainly as reluctant to stay as the others were to go. Mylan and Maringill bowed themselves out last, so intent on Colivert, and trying to puzzle out why she had been called to stay, that they did not realize they were side by side. Their eyes were a perfect match, dark and predatory. The dark-paneled door closed. "Salanda is a very pretty young woman," Rand said. "But some prefer the company of a more mature, more knowledgeable woman. You will sup alone with me tonight, when second even is rung. I look forward to the pleasure." He waved her away before she could say anything, if she could have. Her face did not change, but her curtsy was a trifle unsteady. Salanda looked purely amazed, and infinitely relieved. Once the door had closed again, behind the two women, Rand threw back his head and laughed. A harsh, sardonic laugh. He was tired of the game of houses, so he played it without thinking. He was disgusted with himself for frightening one woman, so he frightened another. It was reason enough to laugh. Colivert stood behind that line of young women who had been flinging themselves at him. Find a bed partner for the Lord Dragon, a young woman whose string she pulled, and Colivert would have a string tied firmly to Rand. But it was some other woman she meant to bed and perhaps even marry, the dragon reborn. Now she would sweat all the hours until second even. She had to know she was pretty, if short of beautiful. And if he rebuffed all the young women she sent, perhaps it was because he wanted one with another 15 or so years. And she would be certain she did not dare say no to the man who held Kyrian in his fist. By tonight, she should be amenable, should stop this idiocy. Avienda would very likely slit the throat of any woman she found in his bed. Besides, he had no time for all these easily frightened doves thinking to sacrifice themselves for Kyrian and Colivert. There were too many problems to deal with, and no time.
Light, what if Colivert decides it's worth the sacrifice?
She might. She was easily cold-blooded enough. Then I'll have to see that it's cold with fear. It would not be difficult. He could sense Sidene like something just beyond the edge of sight. He could feel the taint on it. Sometimes he thought that what he felt was the taint in him now, the dregs left by Saidin. He found that he was glaring at Asmodian. The man seemed to be studying him, face expressionless. The music resumed again, like water babbling over stones, soothing. So he needed soothing, did he? The door opened without a knock, admitting Moraine, Egwene, and Avienda together, the younger women's Aiel garb framing the Aes Sedai's pale blue. For anyone else, even Ruark or another chief still near the city, or yet another delegation of wise ones, a maiden would have entered to announce them. These three the maiden sent on in, even if he was taking a bath. Egwene glanced at Natael and grimaced, and the tune became lower, and for a moment intricate, perhaps a dance, before settling to what might have been the sighing of breezes. The man wore a twisted smile directed at his harp. "I'm surprised to see you, Egwene," Rand said. He swung his leg over the arm of the chair. "What is it? 6 days you've been avoiding me? Have you brought me more good news? Has Massima sacked Amador in my name? Or have these Aes Sedai you say support me turned out to be Black Aja? You notice I don't ask who they are or where. Not even how you know. I don't ask you to divulge Aes Sedai secrets, or Wise One's secrets, or whatever they are. Just give me the driblets you're willing to dole out, and let me worry whether what you don't care to tell me will stab me in the night." She looked at him calmly. "You know what you need to know, and I will not tell you what you do not need to know." That was what she had said 6 days ago. She was as much Aes Sedai as Moraine, for all one wore Aiel garb and the other pale blue silk. There was nothing calm about Avienda. She moved to stand shoulder to shoulder with Egwene, green eyes flashing, back so straight it might have been iron. He was half surprised Moraine did not join them, so they could all three glare at him. Her vow of obedience left a startling amount of room, it seemed, and the three seemed to have become close since his argument with Egwene. Not that it had been much of an argument. You could not argue very well with a woman who watched with cool eyes, never raised her voice, and after one refusal to answer, declined even to acknowledge your question again. "What do you want?" he said.
"These came for you in the last hour," Moraine said, extending two folded letters. Her voice seemed to fit Osmodian's chime-like tune.
Rand rose to take them suspiciously. "If they're for me, how did they come into your hands?" One was addressed to Randall Thor in an exact angular hand, the other to the Lord Dragon Reborn, in script flowing, yet no less precise. The seals were unbroken. A second look made him blink. The two seals seemed to be the same red wax, and one bore the impression of the flame of Tarvalin, the other a tower overlaid on what he recognized as the island of Tarvalin.
"Perhaps because of where they came from," Moraine replied, "and from whom."
It was no explanation, but it was as much as he would get unless he demanded more. Even then, he would have to prod her through every step. She kept her vow, but in her own way.
"There are no poison needles in the seals, and no traps woven."
He paused with his thumb against the flame of Tarvalin. He had not thought of either, then broke it. Another flame in red wax stood beside the signature, Elida d'Avrini Arroyhan, in a hasty scrawl above her titles. The rest was in the angular hand.
"There can be no denial that you are the one prophesied. Yet many will try to destroy you for what else you are. For the sake of the world, this cannot be allowed. Two nations have bent knee to you, and the savage Aiel as well. But the power of thrones is as dust beside the one power. The White Tower will shelter and protect you against those who refuse to see what must be. The White Tower will see that you live to see Tarmangaden. None else can do this. An escort of Aes Sedai will come to bring you to Tarvalin with the honor and respect you deserve. This I pledge to you."
"She doesn't even ask," he said wryly. He remembered Elida well from having met her only once. A woman hard enough to make Moraine seem a kitten. The honor and respect he deserved. He would wager that the escort of Aes Sedai just happened to number 13. Passing Elida's letter back to Moraine, he opened the other. The page was covered in the same hand that had addressed it.
"With respect, I humbly beg to make myself known to the great Lord Dragon Reborn, whom the light blesses as savior of the world. All the world must stand in awe of you, who has conquered Kyrian in one day, as you did Tyr. Yet be wary, I beseech you, for your splendor will inspire jealousy even in those not toiled in the shadow. Even here in the White Tower are the blind who cannot see your true radiance, which will illumine us all. Yet know that some rejoice in your coming, and will delight to serve your glory. We are not those who would steal your luster for ourselves, but rather those who would kneel to bask in your brilliance. You shall save the world according to the prophecies, and the world shall be yours. To my shame, I must beg you to let no one see these words, and to destroy them when once read. I stand naked of your protection among some who would usurp your power, and I cannot know who around you is as faithful as I. I am told that Moraine Damodred may be with you. She may serve you devotedly, obeying your words as law, as I will. Yet I cannot know, for I remember her as a secretive woman, much given to plotting, as Kyrianen are. Yet even if you believe she is your creature as I beg you to keep this missive secret even from her. My life lies beneath your fingers, my Lord Dragon Reborn, and I am your servant, Alviarin Fryden.
He read it through again, blinking, then handed it to Moraine. She barely scanned the page before giving it to Egwene, who had her head over the other letter with Avienda. Perhaps Moraine already knew what they contained. "A good thing you gave your oath," he said. "The way you used to be, keeping everything back, I might have been ready to suspect you by now. A good thing you're more open now." She did not react. "What do you make of it?"
"She must have heard about your swelled head," Egwene said softly. He did not think he had been meant to hear.
Shaking her head, she said more loudly, "This doesn't sound like Alviarin at all."
"It is her hand," Moraine said. "What do you make of it, Rand?"
"I think there's a rift in the tower, whether Elida knows it or not. I assume an Aes Sedai can't write a lie more easily than she can speak one." He did not wait for her nod. "If Alviarin had been less flowery, I might have thought they were working together to pull me in. I can't see Elida even thinking half of what Alviarin wrote, and I can't see her having a keeper who could write it, not if she knew."
"You're not going to do this thing," Avienda said. Elida's letter crumpled in her hand. It was not a question.
"I am not a fool."
"Sometimes you are not," she said grudgingly,
and made it worse by raising a questioning eyebrow to Egwene, who considered for a moment, then shrugged.
"Do you see anything else?" Moraine asked.
"I see White Tower spies," he told her dryly. "They know I hold the city." For at least 2 or 3 days after the battle, the Shido would have stopped anything but a pigeon going north. Even a rider who knew where to change horses, no sure thing between Kyrian and Tarvalin, could not have reached the tower in time for these letters to come back today. Moraine smiled.
"You learn quickly. You will do well."
For a moment, she almost looked fond.
"What will you do about it?"
"Nothing, except make sure that Elida's escort doesn't get within a mile of me." 13 of the weakest Aes Sedai could overwhelm him linked, and he did not think Elida would send her weakest. "That, and be aware that the tower knows what I do the day after I do it. Nothing more until I know more. Could Alviarin be one of your mysterious friends, Egwene?" She hesitated, and he suddenly wondered whether she had told Moraine any more than she had him. Was it Aes Sedai secrets she kept, or wise ones? At last she said simply,
"I do not know."
A rap came at the door, and Somara put her flaxen head into the room.
"Matrim Cothin has come, Karakarn. He says that you sent for him."
4 hours ago, as soon as he had learned Matt was back in the city. What would the excuse be this time? It was time to be done with excuses. "Stay," he told the women. Wise ones made Matt almost as uneasy as Aes Sedai did. These three would put him off balance. He did not give a second thought to using them. He was going to use Matt, too. "Send him in, Samara." Matt strolled into the room, grinning, as if it was a common room. His green coat hung open, and his shirt was half unlaced, exposing the silver fox head dangling on his sweaty chest. But the dark silk scarf was draped around his neck to hide his hanging scar in spite of the heat.
"Sorry I took too long. There were some Kyrianen who thought they knew how to play cards." "Doesn't he know anything livelier?"
he asked, jerking his head toward Osmodian.
"I hear," Rand said, "that every young man who can pick up a sword wants to join the band of the Red Hand. Talmanis and Elysian are having to turn them away in droves, and Dared has doubled the number of his footmen."
Matt paused in lowering himself into the chair Aracombe had used.
"It's true. A fine lot of young fellows wanting to be heroes."
The Band of the Red Hand, Moraine murmured. Shen An Kalhar. A legendary group of heroes indeed, though the men in it must have changed many times in a war that lasted well over 300 years. It is said they were the last to fall to the Trollocs, guarding Aemon himself when Manetherin died. Legend says a spring rose where they fell, to mark their passing. But I rather think the spring was already there.
I wouldn't know about that. Matt touched the foxhead medallion, and his voice picked up strength. Some fool got the name from somewhere, and they all started using it.
Moraine glanced at the medallion dismissively. The small blue stone hanging on her forehead seemed to catch the light and glow, though the angles were wrong.
You are very brave, it seems, Matt.
It was flatly said, and the silence that followed stiffened his face.
Very brave, she said finally. To lead Shen An Kalhar across the Alguenya and south against the Andorans. Even braver than that, for there are rumors that you went alone to scout the way, and Talmanis and Elysion had to ride hard to catch up to you.
Egwene sniffed loudly in the background.
Hardly wise for a young lord leading his men.
Matt's lip curled.
I'm no lord. I've more respect for myself than that.
But very brave, Moraine said, as if he had not spoken. Andorran supply wagons burned, outposts destroyed, and 3 battles. 3 battles and 3 victories, with small loss to your own men, though outnumbered.
As she fingered a rip in the shoulder of his coat, he sank back as far as the chair would allow.
Are you drawn to the thick of battles, or are they drawn to you? I'm almost surprised you came back. To hear the stories, you might have driven the Andorrans back across the Aranin had you stayed.
Do you think this is funny? Matt snarled. If you have something to say, say it. You can play the cat all you want, but I'm no mouse.
For an instant his eyes flickered toward Egwene and Avienda, watching with folded arms, and he fingered the silver fox head again. He had to be wondering. It had stopped one woman's channeling from touching him. Would it stop 3? Rand only watched. Watched his friend being softened for what he meant to do to him.
Is there anything left to me but necessity?
It was a quick thought, there and gone. He would do what he must. The Aes Sedai's voice gained a rhyme of crystal frost as she spoke, almost in an echo.
We all do as we must, as the pattern decrees. For some there is less freedom than for others. It does not matter whether we choose or are chosen. What must be, must be.
Matt did not look softened at all. Wary, yes, and certainly angry, but not softened. He could have been a tomcat backed into a corner by 3 hounds. A tomcat who meant to go down hard. He seemed to have forgotten anyone was in the room except for himself and the 3 women.
You always have to push a man where you want him, don't you? Kick him there if he won't go led by the nose. Blood and bloody ashes. Don't glare at me, Egwene. I'll speak the way I want. Burn me. All it needs is for Nynaeve to be here yanking your braid out of her head, and Elaine staring down her nose. Well, I'm glad she isn't to hear the news. But even if you had Nynaeve, I'd not be shoved.
What news? Rand said sharply.
News Elaine shouldn't hear?
Matt looked up at Moraine.
You mean there's something you haven't ferreted out?
What news, Matt? Rand demanded.
Morgaze is dead.
Egwene gasped, clasping both hands to her mouth below eyes like huge circles. Moraine whispered something that might have been a prayer. Asmodian's fingers never faltered on the harp. Rand felt as if his belly had been ripped out.
Elaine, forgive me.
And a faint echo altered.
Ilyena, forgive me.
Are you certain?
As certain as I can be without seeing the body.
it seems Gabriel has been named King of Andor. And Kyrian, too, for that matter. Supposedly, Morghese did it. Something about the times needing a strong man's hand or some such, as if anybody could have a stronger than Morghese herself. Only those Andorans down south have heard rumors that she hasn't been seen in weeks. More than rumors. You tell me what it adds up to. Andor's never had a king, but now it has one, and the queen's vanished. Gabriel's the one wanted Elaine killed. I tried to tell her that, but you know how she always knows more than a mud-footed farmer. I don't think he'd balk a second at slitting a queen's throat. Rand discovered that he was sitting in one of the chairs across from Matt, though he did not remember moving. Avienda laid a hand on his shoulder. Concern tightened her eyes. "I'm all right," he said roughly. "There's no need to send for Somara." Her face reddened, but he hardly noticed. Elaine would never be able to forgive him. He had known that Ravin, Gabriel, held Morghese prisoner, but he had ignored it because the Forsaken might expect him to help her. He had gone his own way to do what they did not expect, and ended chasing Culloden instead of doing what he planned. He had known and concentrated his attention on Samael, because the man taunted him. Morghese could wait while he smashed Samael's trap, and Samael with it. And so Morghese was dead. Elaine's mother was dead. Elaine would curse him to her deathbed. "I'll tell you one thing," Matt was going on. "There are a lot of queen's men down there. They are not so sure about fighting for a king. You find Elaine, half of them will flock to you to put her on the..." "Shut up!" Rand barked. He quivered so hard with fury that Egwene stepped back, and even Moraine eyed him carefully. Avienda's hand tightened on his shoulder, but he shook it off as he stood. Morghese dead because he had done nothing. His own hand had been on the knife as surely as Ravin's. "Elaine. She will be avenged. Ravin, Matt. Not Gabriel. Ravin. I'll lay him by the heels if I never do another thing." "Oh, blood and bloody ashes," Matt groaned. "This is madness." Egwene flinched as if realizing what she had said, but she kept that firm, calm voice. "You have your hands full with Kyrian yet, not to mention the Shido to the north, and whatever it is you're planning in Tyr. Do you mean to start another war, with two on your plate already and a ruined land besides?" "Not a war. Me. I can be in Camelin in an hour. A raid, right, Matt? A raid, not a war. I'll rip Ravin's heart out." His voice was a hammer. He felt as if acid filled his veins. "I could wish I had Elida's 13 sisters to take with me to smother him and bring him to justice. Tried and hung for murder. That would be justice. But he'll just have to die however I can kill him."
"Tomorrow,"
Moraine said softly. Rand glared at her. But she was right. Tomorrow would be better. A night to let his rage cool. He needed to be cold when he faced Ravin. Now he wanted to seize Sidon and lay about him destroying. Asmodian's music had changed again to a tune that street musicians in the city had played during the Civil War. You could still hear it sometimes when a Carianan noble passed. The fool who thought he was king.
"Get out, Natale! Get out!"
Asmodian straightened smoothly, bowing, but his face could have done for snow, and he crossed the room quickly as if uncertain what one second more might bring. He always pushed, but perhaps this time he had pushed too far. As he opened the door, Rand spoke again. "I will see you tonight, or I will see you dead." Asmodian's bow was not so graceful this time.
"As my Lord Dragon commands," he said hoarsely,
and hurriedly pulled the door shut with him on the other side. The three women looked at Rand, expressionless, not blinking.
"The rest of you go, too." Matt practically bounded toward the door. "Not you. I have things to say to you yet."
Matt stopped short, sighing loudly and fiddling with his medallion. He was the only one who had moved.
"You do not have 13 Aes Sedai," Avienda said. "But you have 2, and myself. I may not know as much as Moraine Sedai, but I am as strong as Egwene, and I am no stranger to the dance."
She met the dance of spears, what the Aiel called battle.
"Ravin is mine," he told her quietly. Maybe Elaine could forgive him a little if he at least avenged her mother. Probably not, but maybe he could forgive himself. A little. He forced his hands to stay at his sides, to not make fists.
"Will you draw a line on the ground for him to step over?" Egwene asked. "Put a chip on your shoulder? Have you considered that Ravin might not be alone if he calls himself King of Andor now? Much good it will do when you appear if one of his guards puts an arrow through your heart."
He could remember wishing she would not shout at him, but it had been so much easier then.
"Do you think I meant to go alone?"
He had. He had never thought of anyone to guard his back, though he could hear a small whisper. "He likes to come from behind or at your flanks." He could hardly think clearly at all. His anger seemed to have a life of its own, stoking the fires that kept it boiling.
"But not you. This is dangerous. Moraine can come if she wishes."
Egwene and Avienda did not look at one another before stepping forward, but they moved as one, not stopping until they were so close even Avienda had to tilt her head back to look up at him.
"Moraine can come if she wishes," Egwene said.
If her voice was smooth ice, Avienda's was molten stone.
"But it is too dangerous for us."
"Have you become my father? Is your name Bran Alvear?"
"If you have 3 spears, do you put 2 aside because they are newer made?"
"I do not want to risk you," he said stiffly.
Egwene arched her eyebrows.
"Oh."
That was all.
"I am not gashying to you."
Avienda bared her teeth.
"You will never choose what risks I take, Randolph Thor. Never. Know it now."
He could... what? Wrap them in Sidene and leave them? He still could not shield them. So they might well snare him in return. A fine mess, all because they wanted to be stubborn.
"You have thought of guards," Moraine said. "But what if who is with Ravin is Simarag, or Grendel, or Lanfear? These 2 might overwhelm one such. But could you face her and Ravin together alone?"
There had been something in her voice when she said Lanfear's name. Was she afraid that if Lanfear was there, he might finally join her? What would he do if she was there? What could he do?
"They can come," he said through clenched teeth. "Now will you go?"
"As you command," Moraine said.
But they were in no hurry about it. Avienda and Egwene took ostentatious care in rearranging their shawls before they started for the door. Lords and ladies might dart at his word, but never them.
"You did not try to talk me out of it," he said abruptly.
He meant it for Moraine, but Egwene spoke first, though to Avienda and with a smile. "Stopping a man from what he wants to do is like taking a sweet from a child. Sometimes you have to do it, but sometimes it just isn't worth the trouble." Avienda nodded.
"The wheel weaves as the wheel wills," was Moraine's reply.
She stood in the doorway looking more Aes Sedai than he ever remembered her, ageless, with dark eyes that seemed ready to swallow him. Slight and slender, yet so regal, she could have commanded a roomful of queens if she could not channel a spark. That blue stone on her forehead was catching the light again.
"You will do well, Rand."
He stared at the door long after it closed behind them. It was a scuff of boots that recalled him to Matt's presence. Matt was trying to slide toward the door, moving slowly so as not to be seen. I need to talk to you, Matt. Matt grimaced. Touching the fox head like a talisman, he spun to face Rand.
If you think I'm going to put my head on the block just because those fool women did, you can forget it now. I'm no bloody hero, and I don't want to be one. Morgaze was a pretty woman. I even liked her, as much as you can like a queen. But Robin is Robin, burn you, and I...
Shut up and listen. You have to stop running.
Burn me if I will. This is no game I chose, and I won't...
I said, shut up! Matt drove the fox head against Matt's chest with a hard finger. I know where you got this. I was there, remember? I cut the rope you were hanging from. I don't know exactly what got shoved into your head, but whatever it is, I need it. The clan chiefs know war, but somehow you know it too. And maybe better. I need that. So this is what you're going to do. You and the Band of the Red Hand.
Be careful tomorrow, Moiraine said. Egwene paused at the door to her room. Of course we'll be careful. Her stomach was turning backflips, but she kept her voice steady. We know how dangerous facing one of the Forsaken will be. By Avienda's expression, they might have been talking about what was for supper, but then she was never afraid of anything. Do you know? Moiraine murmured. Be very careful anyway, whether you think one of the Forsaken is near or not. Rand will need both of you in the days to come. You handle his temper well, though I may say your methods are unusual. He will need people who cannot be driven away or quelled by his rages, who will tell him what he must hear instead of what they think he wants to. You do that, Moiraine, Egwene told her. Of course, but he will still need you. Rest well. Tomorrow will be difficult for us all. She glided away down the corridor, passing from dimness to pool of lamplight to dimness. Night was already coming to these shadowed halls, and oil was in short supply. Will you stay with me a while, Avienda? Egwene asked. I feel more like talking than eating. I must tell Amys what I have promised to do tomorrow, and I must be in Randall Thor's sleeping chamber when he comes. Elaine can never complain that you haven't watched Rand closely for her. Did you really drag the Lady Berowyn down the hall by her hair? Avienda's cheeks colored faintly. Do you think these Aes Sedai in Salidar will help him? Be careful of that name, Avienda. Rand cannot be allowed to find them without preparation. The way he was now, they would be more likely to gentle him, or at least send 13 sisters of their own, than help him. She would have to stand between them in Telairun Riod, she and Nynaeve and Elaine, and hope those Aes Sedai had committed themselves too far to back out before they discovered how near the brink he was. I will be careful. Rest well. And eat well tonight. In the morning eat nothing. It is not good to dance the spears with a full stomach. Egwene watched her stride away before pressing her hands to her stomach. She did not think she would eat tonight or in the morning. Ravine, and maybe Lanfear, or one of the others. Nynaeve had faced Mogadine and won, but Nynaeve was stronger than she or Avienda when she could channel at all. There might not be another. Rand said the Forsaken did not trust one another. She could almost wish he was wrong, or at least that he was not so certain. It was frightening when she thought she saw another man looking through his eyes, heard another man's words come out of his mouth. It should not be so. Everyone was reborn as the wheel turned, but everyone was not the dragon reborn. Moiraine would not talk of it. What would Rand do if Lanfear was there? Lanfear had loved Luz Theron Telamon, but what had the dragon felt for her? How much of Rand was still Rand? You will work yourself into a tizzy this way, she said firmly. You're not a child. Act like a woman. When a serving woman brought her supper of snap beans and potatoes and fresh-baked bread, she made herself eat. It tasted like ashes.
Matt strode through the dimly lit corridors of the palace and flung open the door of the rooms that had been set aside for the young hero of the battle against the Shido. Not that he had spent much time there. Hardly any. Servants had lit two of the stand lamps. Hero. He was no hero. What did a hero get? An Aes Sedai patting you on the head before she sent you out like a hound to do it again? A noblewoman condescending to favor you with a kiss or laying a flower on your grave? He stalked back and forth in his anteroom, for once not pricing the flowered Ilioner carpet or the chairs and chests and tables gilded and inlaid with ivory. The stormy meeting with Rand had gone on till the sun set, him dodging, refusing, Rand following as doggedly as Hawkwing after the rout at Cole Pass. What was he to do? If he rode out again, Talmanis and Elysion would surely follow with as many men as they could put in the saddle, expecting him to find another battle. And he probably would. That was what really put a chill on it. Much as he hated to admit it, the Aes Sedai was right. He was drawn to battle, or it to him. Nobody could have tried harder to avoid one on the other side of the Alguenia. Even Talmanes had commented on it. Until the second time his careful creeping away from one lot of Andorans took them where there was no choice but to fight another. And every time he could feel the dice rolling in his head. It was almost like a warning that a fight was just over the next hill now. There was always a ship, or might be, down at the docks beside the grain barges. Hard to find yourself in a battle on a ship in the middle of a river, except the Andorans held one bank of the Alguenia for half its length or more below the city. The way his luck was running, the ship would run aground in the west bank with half the Andoran army camped there. That left doing what Rand wanted. He could just see it.
"Good morrow, High Lord Wyroman, and all you other High Lords and Ladies. I'm a gambler, a farm boy, and I'm here to take command of your bloody army. The bloody Lord Dragon Reborn will be with us as soon as he flaming takes care of one bloody little matter."
Snatching his black-hafted spear from the corner, he hurled it the length of the room. It struck a wall hanging, a hunting scene, and the stone wall behind, with a loud clang, then dropped to the floor, leaving the hunters neatly sliced in two. Swearing, he hurried to pick it up. The 2-foot sword blade was not chipped or marred. Of course not. Aes Sedai work. He fingered the ravens on the blade.
Will I ever be free of Aes Sedai work?
What was that? Melindra asked from the door. He eyed her as he propped the spear against the wall, and for a change it was not spun gold hair or clear blue eyes or a firm body that he thought of. It seemed that every Aiel went to the river sooner or later to stare silently at so much water in one place, but Melindra went every day just about. Has Kadir found ships yet? Kadir would not be going to Tar Valon on grain barges.
The peddler's wagons are still there. I do not know about ships.
She pronounced the unfamiliar word awkwardly.
Why do you wish to know?
I'm going away for a while. For Rand, he added hastily. Her face was too still.
I'd take you with me if I could, but you wouldn't want to leave the maidens.
A ship or his own horse? And to where? That was the question. He could reach Tyr quicker on a fast river ship than on Pip's. If he was fool enough to make that choice. If he had any choice. Melindra's mouth tightened briefly. To his surprise, it was not over his leaving her.
So you slip back into Randall Thor's shadow. You have gained much honor of your own, among the Aiel as well as the Wetlanders. Your honor, not honor reflected from the Karakarn.
He can keep his honor and take it to Camelin or the Pit of Doom for all I care. Don't you worry, I'll find plenty of honor. I'll write you all about it. From Tyr.
Tyr?
He would never escape Rand or Aes Sedai if he made that choice.
He is going to Camelin.
Matt suppressed a wince. He was not supposed to say anything about that. Whatever he decided about the rest, he could do that much.
Just a name pulled from my pocket. Because of the Andorans down south, I suppose. I wouldn't know where he's...
He had no warning. One instant she was just standing there. The next her foot was in his middle, driving out breath, doubling him over. Eyes bulging, he fought to keep his feet, to straighten, to think. Why? She spun like a dancer, backwards, and her other foot against the side of his head drove him staggering. Without a pause, she leaped straight up, kicking out, her soft boot sole taking him hard flush in the face. When his eyes cleared enough to see, he was on his back, halfway across the room from her. He could feel blood on his face. His head seemed stuffed with wool, and the room seemed to rock. That was when he saw her take a knife from her pouch, slim blade not much longer than her hand, gleaming in the lamplight. Winding the shufa around her head in a quick motion, she raised the black veil across her face. Groggily, he moved by instinct without thinking. The blade came out of his sleeve, left his hand as if floating through jelly. Only then did he realize what he had done and stretch out desperately, trying to snatch it back. The hilt bloomed between her breasts. She sagged to her knees, fell back. Matt pushed himself up, wavering on hands and knees. He could not have stood if his life hung on it. But he crawled to her, muttering wildly, "Why? Why?" He jerked her veil aside, and those clear blue eyes focused on him. She even smiled. He did not look at the knife hilt. His knife hilt. He knew where the heart was in a body.
"Why, Melindra? I always liked your pretty eyes,"
she breathed, so faint he had to strain to hear.
"Why?" "Some oaths are more important than others, Matt Cawthon."
The slim-bladed knife came up swiftly, all her remaining strength behind it, the point driving the dangling fox head against his chest. The silver medallion should not have stopped a blade, but the angle was just that much wrong, and some hidden flaw in the steel snapped the blade off right at the hilt, just as he caught her hand.
"You have the great lord's own luck."
"Why?" he demanded. "Burn you, why?"
He knew there would be no answer. Her mouth remained open, as though she might say something more, but her eyes were already beginning to glaze. He started to pull the veil back up, to cover her face and staring eyes, then let his hand fall. He had killed men and Trollocs, but never a woman. Never a woman until now. Women were glad when he came into their lives. It was not boasting. Women smiled for him. Even when he left them, they smiled as if they would welcome him back. That was all he ever really wanted from women. A smile, a dance, a kiss, and to be remembered fondly. He realized his thoughts were babbling. Jerking the bladeless hilt from Melindra's hand, it was gold-mounted jade inlaid with golden bees, he hurled it into the marble fireplace, hoping it shattered. He wanted to cry, to howl.
"I don't kill women. I kiss them. I don't..."
He had to think clearly. Why? Not because he was leaving, surely. She had hardly reacted to that. Besides, she thought he was chasing off after honor. She had always approved of that. Something she had said tugged at him and then came back with a chill. The great lord's own luck. He had heard it differently many times. The dark one's own luck.
A dark friend.
A question or certainty? He wished the thought made what he had done easier in his mind. He was going to carry her face to his grave. Tyr. He had as much as told her he was going to Tyr. The dagger. Golden bees in jade. He would wager there were nine without looking. Nine golden bees on a field of green, the sign of Ilion, where Samael ruled. Could Samael be afraid of him? Could Samael even know? It was only a few hours since Rand had asked Matt, told him, and he was not sure himself what he was going to do. Maybe Samael would not take the chance.
Right. One of the Forsaken, afraid of a gambler, however stuffed with other men's battle knowledge his head might be. That was ridiculous.
It all came down to this. He could believe that Melindra had not been a dark friend, that she had decided to kill him on a whim, that there was no connection between a jade hilt inlaid with golden bees and his maybe going to Tyr to lead an army against Ilion. He could, if he was a bull-goose fool. Better to err toward caution, he always said. One of the Forsaken had noticed him. He certainly was not standing in Rand's shadow now. Sliding across the floor, he sat with his chin on his knees and his back against the door, staring at Melindra's face, trying to decide what to do. When a servant knocked with his supper, he shouted for her to go away. Food was the last thing he wanted. What was he going to do? He wished he did not feel the dice spinning in his head. Chapter 52. Choices. Laying down his razor, Rand wiped the last flecks of lather from his face and began doing up his shirtlaces. Early morning sunlight streamed through the square arches leading to his bedchamber balcony. The heavy winter curtains had been hung, but tied back to let in a breath of air. He would be presentable when he killed Ravin. The thought loosed a bubble of rage floating up out of his belly. He forced it back down. He would be presentable and calm. Cold. No mistakes. When he turned from the gilt-framed mirror, Avienda was sitting on her rolled-up pallet against the wall, beneath a hanging portraying impossibly high gold towers. He had offered to have another bed put in the room, but she claimed mattresses were too soft for sleeping. She was watching him intently, her shift forgotten in one hand. He had been careful about not looking around from his shaving to give her time to dress, but aside from her white stockings, she wore not a stitch. "I would not shame you in front of other men," she said abruptly. "Shame me? What do you mean?" She stood in one smooth motion, surprisingly pale where the sun had not touched her, slender and hard-muscled, yet with roundnesses and softnesses that haunted his dreams. This was the first time he had allowed himself to look at her openly when she flaunted herself, but she did not seem aware of it. Those big blue-green eyes were fixed on his. "I did not ask Sulin to include Enyla, or Samara, or Lamel that first day. Nor did I ask them to watch you, or to do anything if you faltered. That was only their own concern." "You just let me think they would try to carry me off like a babe if I wavered. A fine distinction." His wry tone flew right past her. "It made you take care when you needed to." "I see," he said dryly. "Well, I thank you for the promise not to shame me, in any case." She smiled. "I did not say that, Randolthor. I said, not in front of other men. If you require it, for your own good." Her smile deepened. "Do you mean to come like that?" He gestured irritably, taking her in from head to toe. She had never shown the slightest embarrassment at being naked in front of him—far from it. But she glanced down at herself, then at him looking at her, and her face reddened. Suddenly she was surrounded by a flurry of dark brown wool and white algota, flying into clothes so quickly that he could have thought she was channeling them on. "Have you arranged everything?" came from the middle of it. "Have you spoken to the wise ones? You were gone late last night. Who else comes with us? How many can you take? No wetlanders, I hope. You cannot trust them, especially not tree-killers. Can you truly carry us to Camelin in 1 hour? Is it like what I did the night—I mean to say, how will you do it?"
I cannot like trusting myself to things I do not know and cannot understand.
Everything is arranged, Avienda. Why was she babbling and refusing to meet his eye? He had met with Ruark and the other chiefs still near the city. They had not truly liked his plan, but they saw it in terms of Jifto, and none thought he had any other choice. They discussed it quickly, agreed, and then turned the talk to other things. Nothing to do with Forsaken or Ilion or battle at all. Women, hunting, whether Kyrian and Brandy could compare with Usquai, or Wetlander Tabak with what was grown in the waste. For an hour he had almost forgotten what lay ahead. He hoped that the prophecy of Rudion was somehow wrong, that he would not destroy those men. The Wise Ones had come to him, a delegation of more than 50, alerted by Avienda herself and led by Amis and Malayne and Bear, or maybe by Soralia. With Wise Ones, often it was difficult to tell who was in charge. They had not come to talk him out of anything, Jiato again, but to make sure he understood that his obligation to Elaine did not outweigh that to the Aiel, and they had kept him in the meeting room until they were satisfied. It was that, or lift them bodily out of his way to reach the door. When they wanted to be, those women were as good at ignoring shouts as Egwene had become. We'll find out how many I can take when I try. Only Aiel. With luck, Mylan and Marengil, and the rest would not know he was gone until after he went. If the Tower had spies in Kyrian, maybe the Forsaken did as well. And how could he trust people to keep secrets who could not see the sun rise without trying to use the fact in Deus de Mar? By the time he had shrugged into a red coat, embroidered in gold, a fine wool eminently suitable for a royal palace, in Camelin or Kyrian, the thought amused him in a bleak sort of way. By that time, Avienda was almost dressed. It was a wonder to him how she could scramble into her clothes so quickly and yet have nothing out of place. A woman came last night while you were away.
Light.
He had forgotten Kolaver. What did you do? She paused in tying the laces of her blouse, eyes trying to bore a hole in his head, but her tone was offhand.
I took her back to her own chambers, where we talked for a time. There will be no more tree-killer flip-skirts scratching at your tent flap, Randall Thor.
The very end I aimed at, Avienda.
Light, did you hurt her badly? You can't go around beating ladies. These people cause me enough trouble without you bringing more.
She sniffed loudly and went back to her laces.
Ladies. A woman is a woman, Randall Thor, unless she is a wise one, she added judiciously. That one sits lightly this morning, but her bruises can be hidden, and with a day's rest she will be able to leave her chambers. And she knows the right of matters now. I told her if she caused you any bother again, any bother, I would come talk to her once more. A much longer talk. She will do as you say, when you say it. Her example will teach others. The tree killers understand nothing else.
Rand sighed. Not a method he would or could have chosen, but it might actually work. Or it might only make Kolaver and the others more sly from now on. Avienda might not be worried about repercussions against herself. In fact, he would be surprised if she had even considered the possibility. But a woman who was high seat of a powerful house was not the same as a young noblewoman of lesser rank. Whatever the effect for him, Avienda could find herself set upon in some dark hallway and give 10 times what she had given Kolaver, if not worse.
Next time, let me handle matters my way. I am the Ka Karn. Remember?
You have shaving lather on your ear, Randall Thor.
Muttering to himself, he snatched up the striped towel and shouted, Come! To a rap at the door. Asmodian entered, pale lace at the neck and cuffs of his black coat, harp case slung on his back, and a sword at his hip. It might have been winter for the coolness of his face, but his dark eyes were wary.
"What do you want, Natale?" Rand demanded. "I gave you your instructions last night."
Osmodian wet his lips and glanced once at Avienda, who was frowning at him.
"Wise instructions. I suppose I might learn something to your advantage, remaining here and watching. But the talk this morning is all of the shrieks from Lady Colivert's apartments last night. It is said she displeased you, though no one seems to know quite how. That uncertainty is making everyone step lightly. I doubt anyone will breathe in the next few days without considering what you might make of it."
Avienda's face was a picture of insufferable self-satisfaction.
"So you want to come with me?" Rand said softly. "You want to be at my back when I face Ravin?"
"What better place for the Lord Dragon's bard? But better yet, say under your eye, where I can show my loyalty. I am not strong."
Osmodian's grimace seemed natural enough in any man making that admission, but for an instant Rand sensed Saidine filling the other man, felt the taint that twisted Osmodian's mouth. Just for an instant, but long enough for him to judge. If Osmodian had drawn as much as he could, he would be hard-pressed to match one of the wise ones who could channel.
"Not strong, yet perhaps I can help in some small way."
Rand wished he could see the shield Lanfear had woven. She had said it would dissipate with time, but Osmodian did not seem able to channel any more strongly now than he had the first day he was in Rand's hands. Perhaps she had lied, to give Osmodian false hope, to make Rand believe the man would grow strong enough to teach him more than he ever would.
It would be like her.
He was uncertain whether that was his thought or Luz Theron's, but he was sure it was true. The long pause made Osmodian lick his lips again.
"A day or two will not matter here. You will be back by then, or dead. Let me prove my loyalty. Perhaps I can do something. A whisker more weight on your side might shift the balance."
Once more Saidine poured into him, just for a moment. Rand felt a sensation of strain, yet it was still a feeble flow.
"You know my choices. I am clinging to that tuft of grass on the cliff's lip, praying for it to hold one more heartbeat. If you fail, I am worse than dead. I must see you win and live."
Suddenly eyeing Avienda, he seemed to realize he might have said too much. His laugh was a hollow sound.
"Else, how can I compose the songs of the Lord Dragon's glory? A bard must have something to work with."
The heat never touched Osmodian. A trick of the mind, he claimed, not the power. But beads of sweat oozed down his forehead now. Under his eyes, or left behind? Perhaps to run looking for a hiding place when he began wondering what was happening in Camelon. Osmodian would be the man he was until he died and was reborn. And perhaps even after.
"Under my eyes," Rand said quietly. "And if I even suspect that where that whisker falls might displease me..."
"I put my trust in the Lord Dragon's mercy," Osmodian murmured, bowing. "With the Lord Dragon's permission, I will wait outside."
Rand glanced around the room as the man departed, backing away still half-bowed. His sword lay on the gilt-lined chest at the foot of the bed. Dragon-buckled sword belt wrapped around the scabbard, and the Shonchan spearhead. The killing today would not be with steel, not on his part. He touched his pocket, felt the hard-carved shape of the fat little man with his sword. That was the only sword he needed today. For a moment he considered skimming to Tyr, to take back Kalendor, or even to Rhoideon, for what was hidden there. He could destroy Ravin with either before the man knew he was there. He could destroy Camlann itself with either. But could he trust himself? So much power. So much of the one power. Sidene hung there just out of sight. The taint seemed part of him. Rage oozed just beneath the surface. At Ravin, at himself. If it broke loose, and he held even Kalendor, what would he do? He would be invincible. With the other, he could skim to Shael Ghul itself, put an end to it all, end it now one way or another. One way or another. No. He was not in this alone. He could not afford anything but victory. "The world rides on my shoulders," he murmured. Suddenly he yelped and clapped a hand to his left buttock. It felt as though a needle had stabbed him, but he did not need the goosebumps fading on his arms to tell him what had happened. "What was that for?" he growled at Avienda. "Just to see whether the Lord Dragon was still made of flesh, like the rest of us mortals." "I am," he said flatly, and seized Sidene. All the sweetness, all the filth, just long enough to channel briefly. Her eyes widened, but she did not flinch, only looked at him as if nothing had occurred at all. Still, as they crossed the anteroom, she rubbed furtively at her bottom when she thought he was looking the other way. It seemed she was of ordinary flesh, too. Burn me, I thought I'd taught her a few manners. Pulling open the door, he stepped out and stood staring. Matt was leaning on his odd spear with that broad-brimmed hat pulled low, a little apart from Osmodian, but that was not what took him aback. There were no maidens. He should have known something was wrong when Osmodian came in unannounced. Avienda was looking around in amazement, as if she expected to find them behind one of the tapestries. "Melindra tried to kill me last night," Matt said, and Rand stopped thinking about maidens. "One minute we were talking, the next she was trying to kick my head off." Matt told the story in short sentences. The dagger with the golden bees. His conclusions. He closed his eyes when he told how he had ended it. "A simple Stark. I killed her." And opened them again quickly, as if he saw something behind his eyelids he did not care to see. "I'm sorry you had to do that," Rand said quietly, and Matt gave a bleak shrug. "Better her than me, I suppose. She was a dark friend." He did not sound as if it made much difference. "I will settle with Samael, just as soon as I'm ready. And how many will that leave?" "The Forsaken are not here," Avienda snapped. "And neither are the Maidens of the Spear. Where are they? What have you done, Randall Thor?" "Me? There were 20 right here when I came to bed last night, and I haven't seen one since."
"Perhaps it is because Matt..."
Osmodian began, and stopped, when Matt looked at him, a tight-mouthed blend of pain and readiness to hit something.
"Do not be fools," Avienda said in a firm voice. "Fardarais Mai would not claim toe against Matt Cawthon for this. She tried to kill him, and he killed her. Even her near-sisters would not, if she had had any. And no one would claim toe against Randall Thor for what another did, unless he ordered it done. You have done something, Randall Thor, something great and dark, or they would be here."
"I have done nothing," he told her sharply, "and I don't intend to stand here discussing it. Are you dressed for the ride south, Matt?"
Matt shoved a hand into his coat pocket, fingering something. He usually kept his dice and dice cup in there.
"Camlann. I'm tired of them sneaking up on me. I want to sneak up on one of them for a change.
I just hope I get the bloody pat on the head instead of the bloody flower, he added with a grimace. Rand did not ask him what he meant. Another Taviran. Two together to twist chance, perhaps. No way to tell how, or even if, but it seems like we'll be together a little longer. Matt looked more resigned than anything else. Before they had gone far down the tapestry-lined corridor, Moraine and Egwene met them, gliding along together as if the day held no more ahead than a walk in one of the gardens. Egwene, cool-eyed and calm, golden great serpent on her finger, really could have been an Aes Sedai despite her Aiel clothes and shawl and the folded scarf around her temples, while Moraine... Gold threads caught the light, faintly streaking Moraine's gown of shimmering blue silk. The small blue stone on her forehead, hanging from its gold chain fastened in her waves of dark hair, shone as brightly as the large gold-set sapphires around her neck. Hardly suitable garb for what they intended, yet in his red coat, Rand could not comment. Perhaps it was being here, where House Dumadred had once held the Sun Throne, but Moraine's graceful carriage was more regal than he remembered ever seeing it. Not even the presence of Jason Tail could spoil that queenly serenity with surprise, but amazingly she gave Matt a warm smile.
So you are going too, Matt. Learn to trust the pattern. Do not waste your life attempting to change what cannot be changed.
From Matt's face, he might have been considering changing his mind about being there at all, but the Aes Sedai turned from him without a trace of worry.
These are for you, Rand.
More letters, he said. One bore his name in an elegant hand that he recognized immediately.
From you, Moraine.
The other carried Tom Marilyn's name. Both had been sealed with blue wax, apparently with her great serpent ring, impressed with the image of the snake biting its own tail. Why write me a letter? And sealed. You've never been afraid to say whatever you wanted to say to my face. If I ever forgot it, Avienda has been reminding me that I'm only flesh and blood.
You have changed from the boy I first saw outside the Winespring Inn.
Her voice was a soft, silver chiming.
You are hardly the same at all. I pray you have changed enough.
Egwene murmured something low. Rand thought it was, I pray you have not changed too much. She was frowning at the letters as if she too wondered what was in them. So was Avienda. Moraine went on more brightly, even briskly.
Seals ensure privacy. That contains things I wish you to think on, not now, when you have time for thinking. As for Tom's letter, I know no safer hands than yours in which to place it. Give it to him when you see him again. Now, there is something you must see at the docks.
The docks, Rand said. Moraine, this morning of all mornings, I've no time for... But she was already moving down the corridor, as if sure he would follow.
I have had horses readied. Even one for you, Matt, just in case.
Egwene hesitated only a moment, then followed. Rand opened his mouth to call Moraine back. She had sworn to obey. Whatever she had to show him, he could see it another day.
What could an hour hurt? Matt muttered.
Perhaps he was reconsidering.
It would not be amiss for you to be seen this morning, Asmodian said. Ravin might just know of it as soon as it happens. If he has any suspicions, if he has any spies who may have listened at keyholes, it might allay them for today.
Rand looked at Avienda.
Do you also counsel delay?
I counsel that you listen to Moraine Sedai. Only fools ignore Aes Sedai.
What could be at the docks more important than Ravin? He growled, then shook his head.
There was a saying in the Two Rivers, not that anybody said it where women could hear. The Creator made women to please the eye and trouble the mind. Aes Sedai were certainly no different in one respect.
1 hour.
The sun was not yet high enough to lift the city's walls' long shadow from the stone quay where Kadir's wagons were lined up, but he still mopped his face with a large handkerchief. It was only partly the heat that made him sweat. Great gray curtain walls stretching into the river at either end of the row of docks made the quay seem a dim box with him caught in it. There was nothing but broad, round-bowed grain barges docked here, and the same anchored in the river, waiting their turn to unload. He had considered slipping onto one when it cast off, but it meant abandoning most of what he still possessed. Yet, had he thought the slow passage down river would take him anywhere except to his death, he would have. Lanfear had not returned to his dreams, but he had the burns on his chest to remind him of her commands. Just the thought of disobeying one of the chosen made him shiver, even with sweat rolling down his face. If only he knew who to trust, to the extent it was possible to trust any of his fellow dark friends. The last of his drivers, who had sworn the oaths, had vanished 2 days ago, very likely on one of the grain barges. He still did not know which Aiel woman had slipped that note under his wagon door. "You are not alone among strangers. A way has been chosen." Though he had several possibilities in mind. The docks held almost as many Aiel as they did workmen, come to stare at the river. He had seen a few of those faces, more often than seemed reasonable, and some had looked at him consideringly. A few Kyrianen had as well, and a Tyran lord. That meant nothing by itself, of course, but if he could find a few men to work with... A mounted party appeared in one of the gateways, Moraine and Randall Thor leading the way with the Aes Sedai's warder as they threaded through the carts hauling grain sacks away. A wave of cheers rode with them. "All glory to the Lord Dragon," and "Hail the Lord Dragon," and now and again, "Glory to Lord Matrim! Glory to the Red Hand!" For once, the Aes Sedai turned down toward the tail end of the line of wagons without so much as a glance at Kadir. He was just as glad. Even if she had not been Aes Sedai, even if she had not looked at him as if she knew every black corner of his mind, he would as soon not have looked too closely at some of the things she had filled his wagons with. Yesterday evening she had made him strip the canvas off that oddly twisted redstone door frame in the wagon just behind his. She seemed to take a perverse delight in making him help her himself with whatever she wanted to study. He would have covered the thing up again if he could bear to go near it, or could make any of his drivers do so. None with him now had seen Herod fall half through it in Rudion and half disappear. Herod had been the first to run away once they cleared the Jangai. The man had not been entirely right in his head after the warder hauled him back. But they could look at it, see the way the corners did not meet properly, how you could not follow it around with your eyes without blinking and growing dizzy. Kadir ignored the first three riders as much as the Aes Sedai had ignored him, and Matt Cawthon almost as much. The man was wearing his hat. He had never been able to find a replacement. The Aiel wench, Avienda, rode up behind the young Aes Sedai's saddle, both with their skirts pushed up to show their legs. If he needed any confirmation that the Aiel woman was betting Althor, he only had to see the way she looked at him. A woman who had taken a man to her bed always looked at him with that light of ownership in her eyes after. More importantly, Natail was with them. This was the first time Kadir had been this close to him since crossing the spine of the wall. Natail, who stood high in the Dark Friends. If he could get past the maidens to reach Natail. Suddenly Kadir blinked. Where were the maidens? Althor always had an escort of spear-wielding women. Frowning, he realized he could not see a single maiden among the Aiel on the quay or the docks.
"Aren't you going to look at an old friend, Hadnan?"
That melodious voice jerked Kadir around, gaping at a hatchet-nosed face, dark eyes almost hidden by rolls of fat.
"Kylie?"
It was impossible. No one survived alone in the waste except Aiel. She had to be dead. But there she stood, white silk straining over her bulk, ivory combs standing tall in her dark curls. A faint smile on her lips, she turned with a grace that still surprised him in a woman so large, and lightly climbed the steps into his wagon. For a moment he hesitated, then hurried after her. He would have assumed Kylie Shaogi really had died in the waste. The woman was bossy and obnoxious. She need not think she was getting a penny of the little he had managed to salvage. But she stood as high as Jason Natail. Perhaps she would answer a few questions. At the least, he would have someone to work with. At the worst, someone to put blame on. Power went with standing high, but so did blame for the failures of those beneath you. More than once he had fed his superiors to those still higher up in order to cover himself. Carefully closing the door, he turned, and would have screamed if his throat had not clenched too tight for sound. The woman who stood there wore white silk, but she was not fat. She was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. Eyes like dark, bottomless mountain pools, woven silver belting her narrow waist, silver crescents in her shimmering black hair. Kadir knew that face from his dreams. His knees thudding to the floor shook breath loose.
"Great mistress," he said hoarsely, "how may I serve?"
Lanfear might have been looking at an insect, one she might crush beneath her slipper, or might not.
"By showing your obedience to my commands, I have been too busy to watch Randall Thor myself. Tell me what he has done, aside from conquering Carrion, what he plans to do."
"It is difficult, great mistress. One such as myself cannot come close to such as he."
"An insect," those cool eyes said, "allowed to live so long as it was useful." Kadir racked his brain for everything he had seen or heard or imagined.
"He is sending Aiel south in huge numbers, great mistress, though I do not know why. The Tyrans and Kyrianen do not seem to notice, but I don't think they can tell one Aiel from another."
Neither could he. He would not dare lie to her, but if she thought he had more use than he did...
"He has founded a school of some sort in a city palace that belonged to a house with no survivors."
At first, there was no way to tell whether she liked what she was hearing. But as he went on, her face began to darken.
"What is it you want me to see, Moraine?" Rand said impatiently, tying Jiaden's reins to one wheel of the last wagon in line.
She was standing on tiptoe to peer over the side of the wagon bed at a pair of casks that seemed familiar. Unless he was mistaken, they held the two Quendiar seals, packed in wool for protection now that they were no longer unbreakable. He felt the Dark One's taint strongly here. It almost seemed to come from the casks, a faint miasma as from something rotting in a hidden place.
"It will be safe here," Moraine murmured.
Lifting her skirts gracefully, she started up the line of wagons. Lan heeled her, a half-tame wolf, the cloak hanging down his back, all disturbing ripples of color and nothingness. Rand glared.
"Did she tell you what it was, Egwene?"
"Just that you had to see something, that you had to come here anyway."
"You must trust Aes Sedai," Avienda said,
almost as levelly, but with a hint of doubt. Matt snorted.
"Well, I mean to find out now. Natail, go tell Bail I'll be with him in..."
At the other end of the line, the side of Kadir's wagon exploded, splinters scything down Aiel and townsfolk. Rand knew. He did not need goosebumps prickling his skin to know. He raced toward the wagon, after Moraine and Lan. Time seemed to slow, everything happening at once, as if the air were jelly clinging to each moment. Lanfear stepped out into stunned silence, except for the moans and screams of the injured. Something limp and pale and red-streaked hanging from her hand, dragging behind her as she walked down invisible steps. Her face was a mask of carved ice.
"He told me, Luz Theron,"
she almost screamed, flinging the pale thing into the air. Something caught it, inflated it for a moment into a bloody, transparent statue of Hadnan Kadir. His skin removed whole. The figure collapsed and fell as Lanfear's voice rose to a screech.
"You let another woman touch you! Again!"
Moments clinging, all happening at once. Before Lanfear reached the stones of the quay, Moraine lifted her skirts higher and began running straight toward her. Quick as she was, Lan was quicker, ignoring her shout of, "No, Lan!" Sword coming out, long legs carried him ahead of her, color-shifting cloak waving behind as he charged. Suddenly he seemed to run into an invisible stone wall, bounce back, try to stagger forward again. One step, and as if a giant hand had smashed him aside, he flew 10 paces through the air, crashing to the stones. While he was in midair, Moraine jerked forward, feet skidding along the pavement, until she was face to face with Lanfear. It was only for a moment. The Forsaken looked at her as though wondering what could have gotten in her way. Then Moraine was flung to one side so hard she rolled over and over until she disappeared beneath one of the wagons. The quayside was in turmoil. Just moments since Kadir's wagon erupted, yet only the blind could not know the one power was being wielded by the woman in white. Along the docks, axes flashed, cutting ropes, freeing barges as their crews desperately fended the craft toward open water and flight. Bare-chested dockmen and dark-clothed townsfolk struggled to jump aboard. In the other direction, men and women milled and screamed as they fought to pass through the gates into the city. And among them, cotton-sore-clad figures veiled themselves and rushed at Lanfear with spears or knives or bare hands. There could be no doubt she was the source of the attack. No doubt she fought with the power. They ran to dance the spears regardless. Fire rolled over them in waves. Arrows of it pierced those who came on with their clothes in flames. It was not as if Lanfear battled them or even paid them any real mind. She might have been brushing aside gnats or bite-me's. Those who fled burned as well as those who tried to fight. She moved toward Rand as if nothing else existed. Heartbeats only. 3 steps she had taken when Rand seized the male half of the true source, molten steel and steel-shattering ice, sweet honey and midden heap. Deep in the void, the fight for survival was distant, the battle before him scarcely less. As Moraine vanished beneath the wagon, he channeled, pulling the heat from Lanfear's fires, sinking it into the river. Flames that a moment before engulfed human forms vanished. In the same instant, he wove the flows again, and a misty gray dome came into being, a long oval enclosing him and Lanfear, and most of the wagons, an almost transparent wall that shut out all not already within. Even as he tied the weave, he was not sure what it was or where it had come from. Some memory of Luz Theron's, perhaps. But Lanfear's fires struck it and stopped. He could see people outside dimly, too many thrashing and flailing. He had taken the flames, not the searing of flesh. That stench still hung in the air. But none would burn now that had not already. Bodies lay inside, too, mounds of charred cloth, some stirring feebly, moaning. She did not care. Her channeled flames winked out. The gnats were dispelled. She never glanced aside. Heartbeats. He was cold in the emptiness of the void, and if he felt sorrow for the dead and dying and scarred, the feeling was so far off it might not have been. He was cold itself, emptiness itself. Only the rage of Sidene filled him. Movement to either side. Avienda and Egwene, eyes concentrated on Lanfear. He had meant to shut them out from this. They must have raced with him. Matt and Asmodian. Outside. The wall missed the final few wagons. In icy calm, he channeled air to snare Lanfear. Egwene and Avienda could shield her while he distracted her. Something severed his flows. They snapped back so hard that he grunted.
"One of them?" Lanfear snarled. "Which is Avienda?"
Egwene threw her head back and wailed, eyes bulging, the world's agony shrieking from her mouth.
"Which?"
Avienda rose on tiptoes, shuddering, howls chasing Egwene's as they climbed higher and higher. The thought was suddenly there in the emptiness. "Spirit woven so with fire and earth. There." Rand felt something being cut, something he could not see, and Egwene collapsed in a motionless heap, Avienda to hands and knees, head down and swaying. Lanfear staggered, her eyes going from the women to him, dark pools of black fire.
"You are mine, Luz Theron, mine!"
"No!"
Rand's voice seemed to come to his ears down a mile-long tunnel. "Distract her from the girls." He kept moving forward, but did not look back.
"I was never yours, Mirin. I will always belong to Ilyena."
The void quivered with sorrow and loss, and with desperation as he fought something besides the scouring of Sidene. For a moment, he hung balanced. "I am Randall Thor, and..."
"Ilyena, ever and always my heart."
Balanced on a razor edge.
"I am Randall Thor."
Other thoughts tried to well up, a fountain of them, of Ilyena, of Mirin, of what he could do to defeat her. He forced them down, even the last. If he came down on the wrong side...
"I am Randall Thor.
Your name is Lanfear, and I'll die before I love one of the Forsaken."
Something that might have been anguish crossed her face. Then it was a marble mask once more.
"If you are not mine," she said coldly, "then you are dead."
Agony in his chest, as if his heart was about to explode. In his head, white-hot nails driving into his brain. Pain so strong that inside the void he wanted to scream. Death was there, and he knew it. Frantically, even in the void frantic, emptiness shimmered, dwindled. He wove fire and spirit and earth, flailing it wildly. His heart was no longer beating. Fingers of dark pain crushing the void. Gray veil falling over his eyes. He felt his weave slice raggedly through hers. The burn of breath in empty lungs, lurch of heart beginning to pump again. He could see again. Silver and black flecks floated between him and a stone-faced Lanfear, still catching her balance from the rebound of her flows. The pain was there in head and chest like wounds, but the void firmed, and bodily pain was remote. Well that it was distant, for he had no time to recover. Forcing himself to move forward, he struck at her with air, a club to knock her senseless. She slashed the weave, and he struck again, 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 each time that she sliced through his last weave. A furious rain of blows she somehow saw and countered, always moving closer. If he could keep her occupied for a moment more, if one of those invisible cudgels landed on her head, if he could get close enough to strike her with his fist... Unconscious, she would be as helpless as anyone else. Suddenly, she seemed to realize what he was doing. Still blocking his blows as easily as if she could see every one, she danced backwards until her shoulders hit the wagon behind her. And she smiled like winter's heart.
"You will die slowly, and beg me to let you love me before you die," she said.
It was not at him directly that she struck this time. It was at his link to Sidene. Panic rang the void like a gong at the first knife-sharp touch, the power diminishing as it slid deeper between him and the source. With spirit and fire and earth, he cut at the knife blade. He knew where to find it. He knew where his link was, could feel that first nick. Her attempted shield vanished, reappeared, returned as fast as he could cut it, but always with that momentary ebbing of Sidene, moments when it almost failed, leaving his counterstroke barely enough to foil her attack. Handling two weaves at once should have been easy. He could handle 10 or more, but not when one was a desperate defense against something he could not know was there until it was almost too late. not when another man's thoughts kept trying to surface inside the void, trying to tell him how to defeat her. If he listened, it might be Luz Theron Telamon who walked away, with Randall Thor, a voice sometimes floating in his head, if that.
"I'll make both of those trolls watch you beg," Lanfear said. "But should I make them watch you die first, or you them?"
When had she climbed into the open wagon bed? He had to watch her, watch for any hint that she was tiring, her concentration slipping. It was a vain hope. Standing beside the twisted doorframe Tirangrial, she looked down at him, a queen about to pass sentence. Yet she could spare time for chill smiles at a dark ivory bracelet that she turned over and over in her fingers.
"Which will hurt you the most, Luz Theron? I want you to hurt. I want you to know pain such as no man has ever known."
The thicker the flow to him from the source, the harder it would be to cut. His hand tightened on his coat pocket, the fat little stone man with his sword hard against the heron branded into his palm. He drew on Sidene as deeply as he could, till the taint floated in the emptiness with him like misting rain.
"Pain, Luz Theron."
And there was pain. The world swallowed in agony. Not heart or head this time, but everywhere, every part of him, hot needles stabbing into the void. He almost thought he could hear a quenching hiss at each thrust, and each came deeper than the last. Her attempts to shield him did not slow. They came faster, stronger. He could not believe she was so strong. Clinging to the void, to searing, freezing Sidene, he defended himself wildly. He could end it, finish her. He could call down lightning, or wrap her in the fire she herself had used to kill. Images darted through the pain. A woman in a dark merchant's dress, toppling from her horse, the fire-red sword light in his hands. She had come to kill him, with a fistful of other dark friends. Matt's bleak eyes.
"I killed her."
A golden-haired woman lying in a ruined hallway where, it seemed, the very walls had melted and flowed.
"Ilyena, forgive me!"
It was a despairing cry. He could end it, only he could not. He was going to die. Perhaps the world would die. But he could not make himself kill another woman. Somehow it seemed the richest joke the world had ever seen.
Wiping the blood from her mouth, Moiraine crawled out from beneath the tail of the wagon and rose unsteadily to her feet, the sound of a man's laughter in her ears. In spite of herself, her eyes darted, searching for Lan, found him lying almost against the foggy gray wall of the dome that stretched overhead. He twitched, perhaps trying to find strength to rise, perhaps dying. She forced him out of her mind. He had saved her life so many times that by rights it should have belonged to him, but she had long since done what she could to see that he survived his lone war with the Shadow. Now he must live or die without her. It was Rand laughing, on his knees on the stones of the quay, laughing with tears streaming down a face twisted like a man being put to the question. Moiraine felt a chill. If the madness had him, it was beyond her. She could only do what she could do, what she must do. The sight of Lanfear hit her like a blow. Not surprise, but the shock of seeing what had been in her dreams so often since Roydion. Lanfear standing on the wagon bed, blazing bright as the sun with Saidar, framed by the twisted red stone Turangrial as she stared down at Rand, a pitiless smile on her lips. She was turning a bracelet in her hands. An Angrial, unless Rand had his own Angrial, she should be able to crush him with that. Either he did, or Lanfear was toying with him. It did not matter. Moiraine did not like that circle of carved, age-dark ivory. At first glance it seemed to be an acrobat, bending backwards to grip his ankles. Only a closer look would show that his wrists and ankles were bound together. She did not like it, but she had brought it out of Roydion. Yesterday she had taken the bracelet from a sack of odds and ends and left it lying there at the foot of the doorframe. Moiraine was slight, a small woman. Her weight did not disturb the wagon at all as she pulled herself up. She winced as her dress caught on a splinter and tore, but Lanfear did not look around. The woman had dealt with every threat except Rand. He was the only corner of the world she acknowledged in the least right then. Suppressing a small bubble of hope, she could not allow herself that luxury. Moiraine balanced upright a moment on the wagon tail, then embraced the true source and leaped at Lanfear. The Forsaken had an instant's warning, enough to turn before Moiraine struck her, clawing the bracelet away. Face to face, they toppled through the doorframe to Rangrial. White light swallowed everything.
Chapter 53. Fading Words. In the depths of a shrinking void, Rand saw Moiraine hurtle seemingly out of nowhere to grapple with Lanfear. The attacks on him ceased as the two women plunged through the doorframe Tirangrial in a flash of white light that did not end. It filled the subtly twisted redstone rectangle as though trying to flood through and striking some invisible barrier. Lightnings arched silver and blue around the Tirangrial, more and more violently. Rasping buzzes crackled through the air. Rand staggered to his feet. The pain was not gone, really, but the pressure was, bringing promise that the pain would go. His eyes could not leave the Tirangrial. Moiraine. Her name hung in his head, sliding across the void. Lan lurched by him, fixed on the wagon, leaning as if only by moving forward could he stop from falling. More than standing was beyond Rand for the moment. He channeled, caught the water in flows of air.
You can't do anything, Lan. You can't go after her.
I know, Lan said hopelessly.
Held in mid-step, he did not struggle, only stared at the Tirangrial that had swallowed Moiraine.
The light sent me peace, I know.
The wagon itself had caught fire now. Rand tried to suppress the flames, but as soon as he drew the heat from one blaze, the lightnings ignited another. The doorframe itself was beginning to smoke, though it was stone. A white, acrid smoke that gathered thickly under the gray dome. Even a whiff burned Rand's nostrils and made him cough. His skin prickled and stung where the smoke brushed. Hastily, he untied the weave of the dome, dispelled it rather than wait for it to dissipate, and wove around the wagon a tall chimney of air that gleamed like glass to carry the fumes high and away. Only then did he release Lan. He would not have put it past the man to follow Moiraine anyway if he could have reached the wagon. It was all in flames now, the redstone doorway as well, melting as if it were wax. But for a warder, that might not matter.
She is gone. I cannot feel her presence.
The words sounded ripped out of Lan's chest. He turned and began walking down the line of wagons without a backward glance. Following the warder with his eyes, Rand saw Avienda on her knees, holding Egwene. Releasing Saidine, he began to run down the quay. Physical pain that had been distant crashed home, but he ran, however awkwardly. Osmodian was there, too, looking around as if he expected Lanfear to leap out from behind a wagon or a toppled grain cart. And Matt, squatting with his spear propped across his shoulder, fanning Egwene with his hat. Rand skidded to a halt.
Is she? I don't know, Matt said miserably.
She still breathes.
Avienda sounded uncertain how long that would continue, but Egwene's eyes fluttered open as Amis and Bear pushed roughly past Rand with Malayne and Soralia. The wise ones knelt clustered around the younger women, murmuring to themselves and each other as they examined Egwene.
I feel...
Egwene began weakly and stopped to swallow. Her face was bloodless pale.
I... hurt.
A tear leaked from one eye.
Of course you do, Soralia said briskly. That is what happens when you let yourself be caught in a man's schemes. She cannot go with you, Randall Thor.
Malaine's sun-haired beauty was openly angry, but she was not looking at him. It could have been anger at him, or anger at what had happened.
I will be right as well, Water, with a little rest,
Egwene whispered. Bear dampened a cloth from a water-skin and laid it across Egwene's forehead.
You will be right with a great deal of rest. I fear you will not be meeting Nynaeve and Elaine tonight. You will not go near till Aeron Riad for some days, until you are stronger again. Do not give me that stubborn look, girl. We will watch your dreams to make sure, if need be, and give your care to Sorrelia if you so much as think of disobeying.
You will not disobey me more than once, Aes Sedai or not, Sorrelia said,
but with a touch of sympathy at odds with her leathery-faced grimness. Frustration was plain in Egwene's face.
I, at least, am well enough to do what must be done,
Avienda said. In truth, she looked not much less haggard than Egwene, but she managed a defiant stare at Rand, plainly expecting argument. Her defiance faded somewhat when she realized the four wise ones were looking at her.
I am,
she muttered.
Of course, Rand said hollowly.
I am,
she insisted. To him. She carefully avoided meeting the wise one's gaze.
Lanfear had me a moment less than she did Egwene. That was enough to make the difference between us. I have told to you, Randall Thor. I do not think we would have survived many moments more. She was very strong.
Her eyes darted down to the burning wagon. Fierce flames had already reduced it to a shapeless, charred pile inside the glassy chimney. The redstone Tirangrial was no longer visible at all.
I did not see all that happened.
They are. Rand cleared his throat. They are both gone. Lanfear is dead, and so is Moraine.
Egwene began to cry, sobs shaking her in Avienda's clasp. Avienda put her head down on the other woman's shoulder as if she too might weep.
You are a fool, Randall Thor, Amys said, standing.
That surprisingly youthful face beneath her headscarf and white hair was stone hard.
About this and many other things, you are a fool.
He turned away from the accusation in her eyes. Moraine was dead. Dead because he could not bring himself to kill one of the Forsaken. He did not know whether he wanted to cry or laugh wildly. If he did either, he did not think he would be able to stop. The dockside that had been emptying when he made the dome was filled again, though few came nearer than where that misty gray wall had stood. Wise ones moved about, aiding the burned, comforting the dying, assisted by white-robed Gaishine and men in the Cadensor. Moans and cries stabbed at him. He had not been quick enough.
Moraine dead.
No healing for even the worst injured. Because he...
I could not. The light helped me. I could not.
Mor-Aielman stood watching him, some only now unveiling. He still did not see one maiden. Not only Aiel were there. Dobrain, bareheaded on a black gelding, did not take his eyes from Rand. And not far off, Talmanis and Elysion and Darid sat their horses watching Matt almost as closely as they did Rand. People lined the top of the great city wall, outlined and cast in shadow by the rising sun, and more along the curtain walls. Two of those shadowed shapes turned away when he looked up, saw each other only 20 paces apart, and seemed to recoil. He would have wagered they were Mylan and Maringill. Lan was back with the horses at the last wagon in the line, stroking Aldib's white nose, Moraine's mare. Rand went to him.
I'm sorry, Lan. If I'd been faster, if I'd...
He exhaled heavily.
I couldn't kill one, so I killed the other. The light burned me blind.
If it had, at that moment, he would not have cared. The wheel weaves.
Lan went to Mondarb, busied himself checking the black stallion's saddle girth.
She was a soldier, a warrior in her way as much as I. This could have happened 200 times these past 20 years. She knew it, and so did I. It was a good day to die. His voice was as hard as it had ever been, but those cold blue eyes were red-rimmed.
Still, I'm sorry. I should have...
The man would not be comforted by should-haves, and they dug at Rand's soul.
I hope you can still be my friend, Lan. After... I value your counsel, and your sword training, and I'll need both in the days to come.
I am your friend, Rand, but I cannot stay.
Lan swung up into his saddle.
Moraine did something to me that has not been done in hundreds of years, not since the time when Aes Sedai still sometimes bonded a warder, whether he wanted it or not. She altered my bond, so it passed to another when she died. Now I must find that other, become one of her warders. I am one already. I can feel her faintly, somewhere far to the west, and she can feel me. I must go, Rand. It is part of what Moraine did. She said she would not allow me time to die avenging her.
He gripped the reins as if holding Mondarb back, as if holding himself back from digging his spurs in.
If you ever see Nynaeve again, tell her.
For an instant, that stone face crumpled in anguish. An instant, then it was granite again. He muttered under his breath, but Rand heard.
A clean wound heals quickest and pains shortest.
Aloud, he said,
tell her I've found someone else. Green sisters are sometimes as close to their warders as other women are to husbands. In every way. Tell her I've gone to be a green sister's lover as well as her sword. These things happen. It has been a long time since I've seen her.
I will tell her whatever you say, Lan, but I don't know that she'll believe me.
Lan bent from the saddle to catch Rand's shoulder in a hard grip. Rand remembered calling the man a half-tame wolf, but those eyes made a wolf seem a lapdog.
We are alike in many ways, you and I. There is a darkness in us. Darkness, pain, death. They radiate from us. If ever you love a woman, Rand, leave her and let her find another. It will be the best gift you can give her.
Straightening, he raised one hand.
Peace favor your sword. Tyshar, Manetherin.
The ancient salute. True blood of Manetherin. Rand lifted his hand.
Tyshar, Malkir.
Lan healed Mondarb's flanks, and the stallion leaped forward, scattering Aiel and everyone else from his path, as if to carry the last of the Malkiri wherever he was headed at a gallop the entire way.
The last embrace of the mother welcome you home, Lan,
Rand muttered, then shivered. That was part of the funeral service in Shinar, and elsewhere in the borderlands. They were still watching him, the Aiel, the people atop the walls. The tower would know of today, or a version of it, as soon as a pigeon could fly there. If Ravin did have some way of watching as well, all it took was one raven in the city, one rat here along the river. He certainly would not expect anything today. Elida would think him weakened, perhaps more pliable. And Ravin? He realized what he was doing and winced.
Stop it. For 1 minute at least, stop and mourn.
He did not want all those eyes on him. Aiel fell back before him, almost as readily as they had before Mondarb.
The dockmaster's slate-roofed hut was a single windowless stone room lined with shelves full of ledgers and scrolls and papers, lit by two lamps on a rough table covered with tax seals and customs stamps. Rand slammed the door behind him to shut out eyes. Moraine dead, Egwene injured, and Lan gone. A high price to pay for Lanfear.
"Morn burn you," he growled. "She deserved that much. Don't you have any feelings left?"
But mostly he felt numb. His body hurt, but under it was deadness. Hunching his shoulders, he stuffed his hands into his pockets and felt Moraine's letters. Slowly, he drew them out. Some things he should think on, she had said. Stuffing Tom's back, he broke the seal on the other. The pages were covered thickly with Moraine's elegant script.
"These words will fade within moments after this leaves your hands. A warning attuned to you. So be careful of it. That you are reading this means that events have fallen out at the docks, as I hoped."
He stopped, staring, then read on quickly.
"Since the first day I reached Roydion, I have known. It need not trouble you how. Some secrets belong to others, and I will not betray them. That a day would come in Carrion when news would arrive of Morgaze. I did not know what